Okay, maybe we'll wait a minute while Linda comes back in and can update us on that. Just on our written agenda, there was an item for Larry Sims on a water line, but he had called back to me and asked to be removed from that. He's still looking at the possibility of drilling his own well versus putting in a pipeline. And as more people build cabins and put in their own water systems or water wells, I'm sure it'll be more and more common that people come to the board, update us, or ask permission to do certain things. And I would encourage people, when they get to that point, to talk to their neighbors. It gets real expensive if everybody's going to do their own very own system. And so if two or three can go together, or if different areas of the ranch can put in a community well and participate, that obviously makes more financial sense. That was one of the plans. I think part of the concern is that Phil's well doesn't produce a lot of water, and so by the time you pipe that much water that far, I mean, you've got a long, long pipeline, and Larry was considering doing it with the expense, with the option of having other people tie into it in the future. But when you're splitting a small amount of water too many ways, pretty soon you're slicing it pretty thin. And so I think Phil had some concerns that he didn't have enough to share with everybody, and Larry didn't want to put up the expense and, you know, to put it all that way without some way of recouping part of it. And I think Larry's got a potential source there on his area for a well, which he could put the same amount of money into his well and system and share with one or two people and more or less recoup a good portion of his funds. Yeah, you're right. What are you, two lots away or pretty close?
What's the status on that tank construction? Why can't you drug up there?
It's still sitting there on the hill. We've been working toward getting some pipe put in the ground yet this year on both the little pipe system we're doing over in Pipeline Canyon up to the big tank, and putting in the system over in Slide Canyon. I don't know that we'll get them both done, but that's my goal, is to put in the one in Pipeline this year for sure, and then do the one over in Slide.
Because if that goes in, it'd be silly for me to...
Yeah, you're close enough to that one. But definitely work. The thing to keep in mind is, if you get too big, then it has to become a public system. If you do too small, then it's too expensive for everybody, so you have to hit the right mix. And
12 or something like that?
14 is the maximum.
Yeah.
But it all depends on how it's done also. Did you reach him at all?
I left a message.
Okay. let's go ahead and do a little financial update and review to figure out kind of where we stand.
Okay. I told him if he didn't get the message to call him, I would have heard him. We have 96% of the assessments in. That's a good thing. We've had a few come in since I sent out those letters, and I sent out another batch yesterday for those who didn't come in last month.
So 96% has been collected.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When Dirk comes back, we'll talk about those that are delinquent. On our reservation fees, it says 54%, and I think I must be doing something wrong there. It's got to be me. I don't know, because we've collected reservation fees for everybody that's made reservations. So I need to look into that. Our store sales are at 6%. There isn't a lot in the store, so that is reasonable why. $15 is all we have from the store receipt. So
$15 for the whole year?
That's it. Or to put out, yeah.
For the whole year?
That's income, store expense.
They should have way more than that.
Wait a minute. I'm misunderstanding. You're saying it's $15 for the whole year?
I think that's home that has been turned in.
They may be taking the money
it and buying things
and using it, apparently.
I need to have it on my records, and so that's something that needs to be reconciled. Our auto expense is way over budget, and our headquarters area is about $45 down. So I was thinking we should use some of this headquarters area expense for the auto expense. We spent so much on auto. And it's quite a bit. So and the same thing with the non-fuel road use. We're at 218% on that one.
Why is that so high?
We filled both tanks, and it came to $6,500.
Where's it all going?
Well,
the generator hasn't been used that much, and the tractor hasn't been used.
I think most of that was used last year. We didn't fill the tanks at all. I don't know when the last time it was filled.
I don't know either.
Part of that was...
We just filled them last month before last, I think. It was about a month and a half ago that we filled the tanks.
And that... $6,500 was the bill at that time when everything was filled?
Yes. That's both diesel and gas, and it's both tanks.
How come we only budgeted $3,000 for that?
I don't know.
Is it non-used diesel and gas and mixing?
No, it's two tanks.
I know that one thing is obviously on the same.
That is the same line item.
But gas probably overused.
Probably,
yeah.
I don't think we got any heavy use of diesel going on.
No. Only trucks for hauling horses around.
Yes.
And taking the trailer and all that stuff. I know he was doing it for a while.
Isn't this a red diesel tank, though?
It is.
Yep.
Everybody
rides that
diesel
pickup.
Diesel.
That's all I'm trying to do this. Like it was being used more than
that. The generator?
Well, they were leaving it on every day. We said, you know.
Well, that we talked about that last board meeting.
Right,
was
right.
They were, they had been running it to provide power for people in the cabins, which that's, you know, the power at the cabins is a luxury. You get to enjoy it whenever it's on. It needs to be on to pump water, and when it's on pumping water, happy birthday, you got power. You don't get power
just because
right?
Because you have for it.
That would make sense.
Right.
Yep.
And that's something that they didn't know. We had never discussed really until last board meeting when we were kind of going, no, we don't need to cater to members. You're at the ranch, not at the Ritz-Carlton, and bring a flashlight with batteries.
They're locked, aren't they?
As far as I know.
I
do not.
I don't know.
I don't think anybody's going in. I don't even know where they are. My understanding.
Well, one
of
the big gas tank is underground there in the front yard of the...
Definitely.
And then I know there's two overhead tanks out around by the loading chute.
There's one diesel tank there by the loading chute and diesel tank there.
And I've just never taken the time to look over and eyeball it to see if there are locks on them or not. Yeah.
Looks like we budgeted $6,000 for the tractor repairs.
Well, before we get into that, though, I need to know what you want me to do about this overage on the auto expenses.
Well, I don't think we change budget. Budget is budget,
and it
stays budget,
yeah.
So that we can evaluate next year, this is how we should change the budget.
I understand
but
that.
But I think when you look at the subcategory, then we can say, well, it's balancing out. We've already spent that money. But we probably want to take an action item to ask a few questions and say for the balance of the year, what's going on with this. And so I think that's the purpose of having it here versus trying trying to make our budget numbers match our actual.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
I understand that. But what I'm thinking is on these other issues where we have the extra money, if we know that that isn't going to be there because it's covering the other, if it's subsidizing the other area, then
right. We should say, well, we
that's
probably
what I
should
wanted to
try do. To spend that.
Right.
You know, and so I think that's, you know, the action items that we are kind of forced to take since we've been over in one area, then, you know, obviously we need to put a cap on some of these
right.
others and say,
that,
well,
that was my point. So
we probably aren't going to do that and that and that. And so, the you know, we've got 4,000 in the headquarters area, and I don't know what that was intended for that's not being spent yet. But we should probably.
Yeah, we had 6 total, but we have 4,000.
Yeah. But I think, you
if
know.
We used that, if we considered that part of the auto expenses, which is all part of the headquarters also, then that
yeah.
then there isn't. Well, there would be 1,000 left.
So I would say we just say that's probably whatever that was for has been used.
Okay.
And, you know, we tried to. The biggest concern that I have is do we have a good process in place, and I'm thinking we do to, at this point, that to manage expenses on a regular basis. You know, there's no spending of expenses unless they're approved by the manager, basically. Right?
That's an assumption. I don't know that there is an actual...
So... That's probably
protocol.
That's probably something we need to actually write out, spell out more, because, I, like you say, I don't think we've ever said this is the
right.
expenses to this amount. You're free to do expenses over this amount. You need approval.
I think that would be a good thing. We have 50,000 left in the account, in the main account. The horse account and the house account have not changed. They're the same from last month. There's not been anything taken out or put in on those. So
we haven't spent much on cabin maintenance.
Well, and I'm getting there. on the non-fuel roads, we were over again $3,000, so I was thinking that that could come from our road contractors' money. We could cut that down so that we have used some of that for that, and then the rest goes into that non-fuel account. There's 8,000 was budgeted for the road services, and if we cut that 3,500 to gasoline, then we've got 5,000 left in the contract services. And it's money that we need to use, or else we're going to end up paying taxes on it at the end of the year. But just knowing how much is there, I think would be a good idea if we cut that cost in your as you plan things. To 5,000, then you'll know how much we can spend on that if we divert another 3,500 to non-fuel gas. Am I making myself clear?
Yes, but I'm having a hard time.
It's on the second page. It's
seeing and looking.
Contract services.
Contract services, right there. Okay,
8,000.
I should have marked your papers. I'm sorry.
okay. Well,
I thought we had allocated at least a couple thousand to. In contract services to get some of the ponds.
We had allocated earlier. We had talked about $2,000 out of I don't know where. We had said we'd set aside $2,000 to start water retention, you know, clean up pond cleanup and everything.
I would imagine it would go into there because we've got already budgeted $8,000, right?
Yep. Can I butt in for a second?
Yes, sir.
Didn't you guys set aside money to run the grader around, but it's been so dry we didn't need to do it?
That's the roads contract services. There's $8,000 in the budget.
Okay, that's a separate item. Excuse me. I'll be quiet.
Well, that's what we're talking about.
That's the line we're talking about right now.
Oh, okay. Because, I was out there last weekend, and you just had so little runoff that things are in pretty darn good shape.
Any of the grading that's been done this year, I've done myself, and I've got some time to turn into Linda. We had discussed earlier about just paying me the operator expense and covering my fuel of what we would have paid had the Deer Springs grader been operating and running. Also, there's a guy there today to get the Deer Springs grader operatable.
Oh,
just
okay.
it's stupid to have it sitting there in a non-functioning position. Whether we use it or not, it should be able to function if we need it for cutting a fire line or pulling somebody out of the mud or opening the road from the blizzard that's going to happen because of global warming.
Was it about 2,000 that we had separated out for that work? I can't remember what
we we originally had said we would spend this was several months ago where we said let's spend $2,000 on pond repair and cleanup.
And what do we owe?
And then the meeting before we said let's take our $2,000 fish fund and also put toward that.
So
I've had Alan Seed go ahead and do the one pond right up against the forest boundary. He's cleaned that out, taken out all the silt.
It looks good.
Made the road nice, cleared it up. Hopefully we'll get some rain or snow or something to put some water in it so it's not just a big hole in the ground. And then he has gone and done quite a good repair on the third fish pond. The lower fish pond dike was damaged actually 3 years ago, and we did a minimal repair on it, but down below the willows, it was still, there was a cavern down underneath there that you could lose a Suburban in. You really couldn't see it because of the willows.
That big crack and stuff.
Yeah. So he's done a good repair on that and cleaned out the willows around the pond so it's more accessible. He's done a cleanup. There was a pretty good erosion cut from fish pond number one to number two where the road was supposed to be down that west side.
Oh, right.
So he's cleaned that all up. And so he has eaten up the $2,000 that we set aside for pond repair and the $2,000 of our fish money that we put in toward there. So I expected him to have a bill to you either. I told him to either get it to me or to Brent Fulmer or to Ole, and we'd bring it to you. And
$414 or something like that?
I don't remember exactly. One area he spent $1,900, and the other area he spent $2,200 or something. But it's right in the right in that area.
Okay, so we take $2,000 and $2,000 out of the contract.
Right.
So that would leave $3,000 left in there if we take $3,500 of that and put it to the fuel. That would leave $3,000 left in contract services.
Right.
And then you have a bill for approximately.
I haven't even.
Okay.
It's not going to amount to terribly much. Like Vance said, because of the minimal erosion done during the winter and then the little moisture in the ground this spring and summer, most of the time when you grade, you do more damage than good if you're not doing it at the right time. So I've gone through and repaired. If you remember, there was a pretty good washout across the road where Crawford Canyon and Meadow Canyon split.
Right.
I fixed that. Another little washout up above going toward the old cabin in the meadow. Knocked out washboards in the road up and down Meadow Canyon at particular spots and into the driveway of the ranch. And then Broad Hollow was kind of rough and rutted and cleaned it up pretty good. I've run around a spot or two. We had, as the association committed to different members, that if they would buy and haul the gravel on parts of the road that were association roads, then we would cover the blade expense to knock it out. And I did your driveway
Randy Fry has done some work
a week or so ago.
Up on the, I can't remember which road it is, but Randy Fry has done some work up there also.
Okay. And then I don't remember which member it was, down toward Vance Green's place.
Mm-hmm.
Who was your neighbor, Vance, that did?
Ellert's. Yeah.
Reshaped the road a little bit and put more gravel on it, and so I ran that road a little bit. So I've done just spotty here, spotty there, and probably enough to pay to repair the drive chain on my grader that I broke 2 days ago out there.
Oh, right.
But I got it fixed. I got it back together last night in the rain. Okay, so we're going to move
$3,500
from
contract services to gas.
And we're also taking the $2,000
fish
money went toward repairs, but the original $2,000 that we set aside for that, where was
that in the contract services?
That's all from contract services. So that would leave us, if you want to pencil that in, $3,000 in contract services. if you want to pencil.
Okay, I'm not. That's not adding up for me though, because if you're going to move 3,500.
3,500 to the.
To the
gasoline at the ranch.
To gas. And we.
And then 2,000 from fish and 2,000 from contract.
Okay, 2,000 already went out for pond repair.
Mm-hmm. That'll leave us 3,000, and then we need your bill from that to know the true amount there. So, less than contract services.
Okay.
Okay.
It will leave 2,500.
Yeah, 2,500,
okay.
Not 3,000.
So there's 20. I'm just trying to write these on here so I remember 2,500.
Remember the 5,000.
Yeah, I was rounding up to the.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
That makes sense.
That needs to be used, but that limits that budget a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, here's one thing I'm thinking, though. We have a budget item of $2,400 in crop management and erosion control.
That's correct.
Well, we use that.
We have spent $462
mm-hmm.
for something. I don't know what.
Well,
that's the area that I would think that the...
Hold on. Crop management and erosion control is $600. You're looking at fencing, I think.
Fencing, okay. I'm cross-eyed. Tilt my head this way and the lines line up different. Okay, I was looking, you're right, I was looking across.
And we have spent some fencing on things that
some. We're going to spend some more to put the fence on where all the posts have gone in. Don't we have $2,500 in fencing?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
We had 24 and we've spent 460.
So
we've got
a little bit.
$1,938.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Fish and supplies, that $2,000 gone. Horse insurance is $2,000, which is $2,000 that we're not going to spend. Right?
Buying additional horse insurance on top of mine?
No.
Just
no,
in
we
our
had
budget.
It budgeted from last year.
We have rent liability.
Linda, you made a comment about if we don't use it, we have to pay taxes on it.
Right.
What's that?
We ended up paying more tax this year than we needed to because we had...
Any money we have is taxed. At the end of the year.
All the effort I make to save money
How?
Is costing us money.
Well,
now I have a question about that because I've been on
be able to put
a reserve
to a capital replacement account.
We have a savings account with 6,000 in it.
But you know, over the years we should be able to take some and say, "Hey, we're allocating, you know, so much of this towards this project
yeah.
that's going to take
6 years
more money
or whatever
and stuff, and we should be able to
take any extra money and put that
save
in.
Some money and put
you
some
tax,
over into that.
Tax on that
on the capital replacement.
No matter what, turn it on profit.
What we've done in the
know,
past,
in a lot of homeowners associations, you can create a reserve account.
You have to,
right?
Because 1 year you might end up. Spending $100,000 like we do on this.
Yeah.
Well,
we don't.
I would just suggest that we look into some issues there.
I have looked into it before in the tax.
He's who does our taxes.
Well,
you can save as much as you want, but you're still going to pay income tax at one time on it.
I think the reserve account sometime.
Yeah.
Well, I think that'll be a way
for items that are depreciable expenses that you have a way to do that, but.
Well, we can definitely look into that. In the years past, we tried to...
Typically, you have to earmark 100% to that, and then if
right.
you took one penny out of it, then you'd be penalized like crazy.
Sure.
Right?
But I still think that we should do that and
yeah.
try to...
With any overages?
Yeah.
Right.
Otherwise, we'll never get any capital improvements done.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it ends up getting spent on little stuff, and we don't
yeah.
ever build.
Yeah. We got to get it up going there.
Yeah, so we should check with somebody on that.
Okay. I'm going to put that, you down for that.
Okay.
Ask about it.
I wrote it down. I'll call Niall and talk to him. The other, on the next page, on page 3, under water resources, we have system maintenance and repairs. We've got about $1,200, $1,190 left that we can take care of that water tank. I don't know that that would cover it.
The tank that's
page number 3.
System maintenance and repairs.
Under water resources at the top.
Water storage.
Right above
that's
that.
A good decision. We need to do something with that.
Well, when we get to the part of the year when we can lower the water, you know, when we don't have their people reliable, I think that we can get
planning ahead for that.
I think Richard will do some of that because Richard Cawthorn is the one that coded.
Larry?
Yes.
On the subject of the water tank, you know, Brent probably told you what we did to look inside there with the mirror. Or not?
No.
Okay. Took a got a big mirror, like a bathroom cabinet mirror. Went over there about 3 o'clock in the afternoon last Saturday when the sun was low, and we used it to shine light inside that tank all the way from one end to the other. And it is only the flat ends that are peeling. Middle part, the cylindrical part, is not peeling at all. Okay. Don't know why, other than thermal stress, because the ends are facing, one of them is facing the sun, but the other one isn't, so that kind of ruled that out. But only the ends need to be fixed on that thing.
Well, that's a pretty simple solution. I know exactly what happened. They didn't use flat paint.
Well, yeah. And the other question I had is when you're thinking about doing this in the off season, you need to find out if that coating is epoxy-based, you can't do it when it's cold.
It's got to be a certain temperature. Yeah.
Exactly right, and it has to be that temperature for a good 24 hours, doesn't it?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, Brent and I say, oh, okay, no problem, we'll do it in the winter. It's like, ooh, wait a minute. Maybe you can't do it in the winter.
This is the 40,000-gallon tank. It was, I mean, it was.
I drained that tank down almost to the bottom one time just to check out the damage on it and open the hatch and climb down in there in my little sock and feet and went full. This end you could fix pretty easily, the latter end, but to get to the end down by the drain, you'd have to drain it completely. And the trouble is the there right now, the worry I have is there's pieces of that paint that are 1/4 inch thick because of the layers. Maybe that's the way it's designed, but it's taken off the piece of the tank when it comes to the rust side of it. And there, some of them are, you know, 14 inches across, floating around. All one of those has to do is go up against the, where the water comes out, and we'll have a problem. Right now, they're kind of settled on the end where they fell off. I don't see any current in there, but the ones chipping from the other end, you know, I can't really tell, and I don't want to jump in our water system because I have to test that.
Well, we don't want to drain. We don't want to drain those down the pipe to get clogged in every time.
Yeah, that's the other thing. When we do go to go down, when we make that decision, we need to swim in there and put a screen over it before we get right to the bottom, because when it gets to the very bottom is when that stuff's going to move into it.
Did we ever determine or find out what the plug up was or on Rob Johnson's?
Yeah, it was his. It was just.
I have some information on that if nobody else does.
Go ahead, tell us.
Okay. Same day. You know, the reason we were looking at the tank is because, you know, Rob had the symptoms. You know, you guys down at the ranch don't know about it because you're a mile and a half or whatever away. It turns out that we think Rod has a bad hydrant, in-ground hydrant. He's got plenty of water at the bottom, the lowest end of his system. You take it apart, it you know, Brent says it blows big time. But he's got a kind of a cycling problem. I don't know if any of you have experienced the situation where you have a water heater with a temperature and pressure valve on top, and it starts to malfunction and go thunk, ga-thunk, ga-thunk. Well, that's what's happening with him. That's not a flow issue. I think that's a mechanical issue.
So some type of an airlock?
No, I think it's actually what's happening is he's got some bad O-rings in his hydrant, and it's letting water pass, and it's pressuring up. It's not shutting off properly. But so we, you know, being as that his line feeding his place seems to have adequate volume and pressure, I don't think we can blame the tank flaking issue on that.
Okay, that was my possible concern, was that since he's right there first in line and took a gulp of paint flakes, that's what was plugging it up.
Yeah, did he actually do that? I didn't hear he'd done that.
Oh.
Okay, he didn't actually get paint flakes out of his system?
No.
Okay,
no,
okay.
I wondered if that's what had gone down his line and plugged it up.
Right, right. Well, we theorized about that, but like I say, Rod was there Saturday. Brent went down to see him while I did a couple other things up on top and came back and described the hydrant behavior to me, and I'm thinking, well, that's the hydrant screwing up, and it's at the upper end of his system after the pipe has actually dropped low through his wash, little gulch, and climbing back up to where he's got his trailers and stuff. And I'm thinking you can occasionally, if you get things just right, you can set up an interesting water hammer in a piping system and get exactly that thing to happen. So he was gonna dig up his hydrant and have a look at it. I don't know if he's done it yet or not.
All right. Well, we can certainly work with Richard Cawthorn when the appropriate time comes this fall, and I will talk to him. Because I'm sure that we'll have to cover some of the expenses of the epoxy, but I would certainly push for getting kind of a warranty. I mean, we haven't, it wasn't that long ago.
Well, if the tank's rusting, don't you have to sandblast it?
He's done all of it. He's supposed to do all of it.
Yeah. He did all
of it. But it's rusting again? You saw rust?
Apparently it was quite
well, where it flakes off, of course, it oxidizes the metal, but... With Linda, if you could check the booking, where there's a lull in the people, we can drain it pretty quickly. Sandblast and paint.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. Back up. You guys need to ask Richard about the coating and the temperature issue.
Yeah.
That is basically your dictating factor right there. If I've worked with some epoxy coatings before, and they don't want to see less than 65 degrees to cure. And if you guys have that situation, then you need to, that's going to be number one, what determines when it gets done, and then number two is when people are not there.
The tank is in the ground.
No.
It's going to be hard to heat that up in the fall, though.
Yeah, you can build a few little bonfires around it.
Well, you can put one of those surface blower like they use in the big building construction.
Heater one.
Yeah, it's a propane heater.
Easy.
What could have happened is when it was done the first time, he could have sandblasted it perfectly clean. If the temperature and the air humidity was a certain consistency, not correct, and they applied the epoxy over the top of it, you've got a layer underneath that that goes ahead and does a little rusting that makes the whole thing flake off.
Would we contract Cochran to do that?
You're just asking him to fix something that wasn't done right the first time.
Yeah, we paid him
so
a couple $1,000 to do that.
How long ago was that?
To redo it?
2 years.
So, and we don't know how long it's been flaking. It might have been flaking after the first year.
Well, he also did the 80,000-gallon tank we've got up in Pipeline Canyon, and I was on it 2 weeks ago, and he just finished it last year. I mean, like not a full year ago, and the paint, I got on the lid of it up on the roof, and there's sections that the paint's fine, and then there's a little section that is off, like, you know, in a big 18 to 24 inch flake peeling off.
So you got problems there too.
So whether it was temperature, paint, whatever the issue was,
it was flaking in January. When actually it was flaking in November when I looked in the tank the first time of last year, so it's almost a year ago.
Should we just ask him for a discount on the price of fixing it?
I'm
worried that he won't get it done right.
Well, first of all, we ought to ask him to go up and explain.
Look at it, evaluate.
Yeah, right.
And let him tell you what he's going to do about it.
Yeah.
He may need to sandblast off that hasn't flaked as well at this point in time.
Yeah.
Who will call him then?
I will.
Okay, so I'm going to have Larry. You're going to have to call them on your tank, too.
Yeah.
Well, in the large one, is that yours?
Up in Pipeline Canyon is.
Well, Well, we have $1,100 we can put towards that in the budget, so it's not a lot. But.
Well, and that's one of the areas where if we don't spend that money, there should be a way to set it aside in a reserve, because
yes.
When something goes wrong with that water system, it's not going to be an $1,100 repair.
Right.
No.
It's going to be a $4,000 repair.
That's why we
know.
Should have a fairly serious reserve account.
I think so.
That's the thing. We should explore the tax possibilities, how that works.
I will check on that.
And, but I think you ought to make sure and ask the right questions, because my experience sometimes with Tile is, nope, there's no way to say no. Well, for capitalizing, appreciating things, are you? Because I have two other homeowners associations that I'm responsible for budgets, and we do have capital replacement side accounts that we put money into
that we're
not paying taxes on. So
yeah.
I don't know.
Do you want me to do it, or would you like to call him?
Either way. I mean,
you have experience in calling. I would prefer you call him.
That's fine. I'll give him a call.
Okay. Thank you.
We do have a chunk of money in cabin maintenance.
Well, that was my next item I was going to get to. We have in cabin maintenance, where are we at here? Where are you at on page one?
We need to make all, yeah.
We have approximately $7,000 in cabin maintenance, and I have made a list.
Don't we have a list of priorities on things that need to be fixed? Yeah, I thought you did.
I put together a list. These are actually, there's a checklist for the fall that is closing the cabins. I just put it down on paper so it would be there for sure. Yours? It was a Hensley that called. Didn't start calling, but they just left me a message. So there's a repairs needed here that I see, and this is just bones here. You've got much better handle on what needs to be done than I do.
I have a list in my pocket.
The only reason I have this is because we were
some
there
roof repairs.
This is to check off, and the closure for the cabins is the list that we need to do when we close the cabins down in October. The fall repairs needed are things that I saw that, and just general in general, things that need to be done. But like I said, that's just bones and a piece of paper so that we can add to or subtract from what needs to be done. So,
that's
but
great.
There is, my point is that there is funding to do that. Whatever repairs are needed. There is a hole in the roof in number two that is right down to the wood that really needs to be done on cabin number two. And the windows, I think Larry, you and I were talking about that either.
Several windows probably even need to be
and
repaired.
And what did you find from
placed?
I forgot his first name.
Metal. Joe?
Yeah.
He's doing screens. I didn't talk
okay.
to him about windows. He's
right.
having health problems too. So.
We have several screens that probably need to be replaced.
Well, he's doing
He's doing all the screens, but we talked about there's a few windows that are, there's some that need repair, but there's others that it would probably be simpler and easier and better. There were poor quality windows to begin with, and the mechanics of up and down single hung spring-loaded mechanisms are shot.
And that is the case in nearly all the cabins in cabin number two.
Yeah, 9 and 10, I know, had a couple of them that were like that as well.
I had them on the list also.
Yeah, that were falling out and not doing well. At least one of them was cracked. Every time I got up there, it was just damaged, period. It needed to be replaced.
I think that one's in number 10.
Yeah.
Is the propane heater working in number 7? I've had people that want to go into November in number 7.
I haven't cranked it up since we turned it off.
Okay. I've got reservations for the last week in October. And the
it worked. It worked.
I was thinking there was some problem with it, but it's not. Okay.
So these things that we've got to do, who's going to do them?
I didn't plan that. I just planned what I saw. My point on giving you this list is that there's things that could be done with the cabins. We have the expenses to do it and, to, like
money.
I said, to give you bones to write on what other things you wanted to do. That you, because you've got the complete list.
The screen situation is something of a mystery how I've never seen so many screens so badly abused. And I never actually witnessed screens being abused. I know that it has to do with leaving your key somewhere, trying to get in through a window and tearing up the screen. But, I mean, almost every screen has had some little issue with it. And one of the first things Brent said when I came here is you got to learn about screens. I thought he was joking. But, I mean, the screens disappear like a disposable, like paper towels around them.
I made a page for the guidebook for next year because I think we're going to have our screens fixed, and then we'll put a page in there. It's been a custom at Deer Springs Ranch to take the screen out to get into the cabin. And if they're not put back in right, I mean, that's the whole time we've had property there. That's what people do.
Well, Taylor, what was your comment?
I think Louise's looking at take a little bit more money at this. Actually,
put
all the screens, maybe make
wood
frames out of them.
And make them hinged or screw them on.
Hinged, put some, you know, wing nuts,
Yeah. I wondered about, because everybody's trying to pop one off to get in, whether we make one.
Because George has the key, and you got back to the cabin earlier and have to use the restroom. I mean, it's just been a tradition to do that at the ranch.
Why don't we just take and put a key hooked to a chain, screwed to... Right next to the door, then.
That brings something else up that needs to be addressed. We don't have any copies to the keys that we have there. We have lost and gotten returned and had them sent back in the mail. People show up to do the trans for their cabin, and the people that just checked out didn't return the key.
Yes.
I go up with Sharky and unlock it, and I think, you know, there's two things you can do. You can make a whole bin full of keys for each cabin and just hand them out like confetti. But then what's the point of locking a cabin if there's a key everywhere for it? We can do like he says. We can just chain it so they can get in and out, but what's the point of having a lock? Because if somebody wants to steal anything, they just use the key that's chained there. What we do is we leave the cabins completely open. We put the key on top of the phone book on the table. If they want to lock it, they can. But when was the last time somebody robbed somebody from one cabin to the other up there? I don't know why they should have, I mean, unless crime's a problem. So far, screens are a problem and crime's not.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we should give any keys out at all. Brent, you know, why are you giving keys?
You can also buy auto locks that run off a battery, and the battery lasts about 5 to 7 years. $100 a piece, and you just put in the code and it opens the door.
Well, we like having a key when we're up there.
They'll forget their code and tear the screens off.
Because we have camera equipment, you know, when we're staying.
And you can use a regular key for it too.
Also,
what if you have a lockbox inside the cabin and if they had something they could lock that up, and then it wouldn't prohibit you from getting in the
some of the houses that we manage, we have a screwed a key box on the outside. It's a push-button thing, so you
code.
It's got 10 things, and so you give people the code. Once it's open, you have to take a little thing off with a screwdriver, and you can change the code. So, you know, you can change them periodically. But then they open that. He's attached right to that combination thing. They use it on the door there, and they put it back in.
I've often thought we should do something similar to that. For the keys when people are coming in late, so that only doesn't get disturbed at 12 o'clock.
I just put a key on the table.
I mean, you could do that too.
Like some kid that got a key, they can use it or not.
The only other reason the lockup.
I don't always get them back.
Is that kids from other cabins wander around when they're up there, and they'll go in if it's open. I mean, they go in.
Have we had incident of that? I mean, have you had any incident where people are stealing from others?
Not always stealing. Sometimes
just exploring, just seeing.
Nothing else. Nobody.
Well, it boils down to either you take the...
Real quick, we've had, you know, people come up with the lock, you know, on their own, and they go in the cabin. What the cabins look like.
Yeah. So it is a major problem.
It's a small problem, but it's...
Make more keys or...
Yeah, make more keys.
Make less screens. If you take the screens off, then you don't have a screen problem.
I
think we need screens. We need screens. Now, there are different ways you can do screens. I had, my old house in Arizona, we had sunscreens in all the house. And so, basically, they were screwed in on the outside of the house. You could take them out with a screwdriver, but they were screwed in on the outside of the house. And they're a nice, very heavy, durable screen fabric, you know, like the, not the metal, but more of a, I don't know, plastic mesh type of thing, and they're real nice. That might be another
book. Just now.
No, screen. And it covers the whole window, not just
that's
a little section.
The wood, just make a wood frame screen.
And you can do that.
So it can't come out, because they will come out.
And those don't come out.
They'll break them. They'll take a lot of
yeah.
years to get in. So. If it can't come out easy, then kids won't be taking them out.
Since we just spent a week at the garden cabin fighting flies, I'm sure we killed a trillion of them. John said it was closer to 2 trillion. The frames are there, but the frames are bent up to a point where the flies are just...
Yeah, you can't do anything.
Or have those sliding panes in them that just simply, they just don't fit.
There's gaps in them, too.
Yeah.
It just drives you crazy because it's...
Right after it rains, all the flies hatch or whatever they do, but it was insane there 2 days ago right after.
I mean, we could pay somebody to be the screen person, and they have the nice, well-done... frames and everything, and they can do them. They just screwed in with clips on the outside, and you can take the clips off if you unscrew them. And it covers the whole window on all of them. And they're very durable.
Right now, he's covering costs and just using cabin time to do it. So
we might want to allocate some money.
It's an ongoing thing, yeah.
Thing, then they'll easily last for 1 or 2 years in that cabin.
Yeah. And then as we go, we could do this type of thing.
I think
they institute the screen deposit when you leave.
So, Taylor, do you think if we really kind of solve something, the key issue, that would maybe solve 80% of the problem?
No, I think a lot of it is kids.
Yeah.
In my experience, it's been kids falling out the window.
So do we just at the end of the closeout for that week that they take the cabin, somebody looks at the cabin and say, if the screen's trashed, and it wasn't trashed the last week, they got to pay for it. I mean, people need to be responsible for the damage that
they did. We need the digital camera for that. We need a digital camera for that because that is...
That's $200.
We've had people that I've called and said, like, a window's broken, you know, do you know anything about that? And, well, it was like that when we got here, but they didn't notice it the week before, so... You really need to have a digital camera.
That creates a lot of time, though, for somebody to go up, take a picture before they come in, take a picture after they leave.
Yeah. Or as you go and...
Well, you only
already
have... You only need a picture when there's damage.
Right. It's for damage, so you can send it to them on
the... We can do it when we're restocking. I mean, we have to be up there anyway.
Yeah.
But
Number two is where we have 2 broken windows. They're just cracked, but the reason they are is because they don't slide. And we were there, and the wind blew one out, you know.
If they don't slide, it means that the frame's compressing them. And if it's compressing, that's what caused the break.
Right.
The house is settling.
Well,
things are...
No, they broke.
Those are loose. There are some that slide up and down, and the mechanical, the spring-loaded mechanism on the side has broken. And so when the window drops... Or falls
out.
Clear out.
Yeah.
They can come out. So I think...
Those would worry me, though, because if they're cracked like that, those cracks go all the way down
them.
If they fell out in the sheet, it could be
jagged.
Get somebody.
And that one upstairs could, because it's right above the bed.
We need to make a list of windows that we just need to replace, period. Just replace them.
Yeah.
Right on those, we put in whole new frames.
Yeah.
That's what we were talking about.
Entire windows.
We have it in the budget. We can do it.
Let's do it.
We need to make a motion.
Sure, a handyman and can I have or somebody that can do all that stuff?
I think this Nelson guy, AR Glass.
He doesn't do house windows. He does
auto windows.
He's been doing them now.
Joe does.
He did the window for us that we have out there.
A&R Glass does house windows.
Is he doing house windows?
Yeah.
Well, he just made the window, and then I installed it.
He doesn't
want to
be mine, then.
Well,
he does one of my camp trailers.
He and Joe were kind of partnered up.
Together, and
yeah.
He told me, Joe does the house windows, I do the car.
Yeah, they replaced 2 windows in my house that got knocked out with golf balls.
Okay.
But it was Joe and Nielsen.
Okay.
So there's some combination there. I don't know.
Yeah, they're working together. They are. They're good buddies. Do you
want to
do that?
I'd say we should use
the... Yeah, have them go in and look at each of the windows and come up with a number that it would cost.
I think we should. What kind of window do we want to replace them with?
Better.
a vinyl.
Yeah.
The vinyl. So I think that's what we ought to do.
And that way, eventually, as time goes on, we end up replacing all of them.
Yeah. Is your glass company here who does, you know, contracting windows? And
that's them.
They ordered our stuff through, like, Jones Paint and Glass.
Because it's really not that difficult. I mean, if you're going to replace the window, all you do is order one a quarter inch smaller than the one that's there currently. Flip in easy vinyl, it's easy to screw up, and if the molding's there, it's...
Do you want to do it?
I can. If you're going to order, if you're going to buy a new window and tear those out, it's nothing to put in a window.
You
very
should get
easy
them
to
at
do.
Home Depot then and have you put them in.
Well, I'm very good friends with Sevier Valley Glass up there. I can get a, probably a good deal. What we should do is, I mean, if you're going to replace the whole window, put the window in is simple. And you can take any, it depends on the structure that holds the window, but installing window is pretty simple and caulking it.
Well, let's take cabin number two. And
let's just do cabin two, and I'll handle it and see how much work
right.
it is and how hard it is and
if you
what cost
to
it.
Do it. Yeah.
I guarantee you my cost of sticking it in is going to be cheaper than hiring somebody on
well,
a contract.
Them,
they'll charge you to drive out there. They'll charge
right.
you to be out there. They'll charge you.
Mm-hmm.
I live out there, and if you're going to get a new window, I'll just buy it.
We redid the window in one.
We did, the fair.
I don't remember what broke it or what happened. Or
so the only thing I'd say, always try to get a good brand.
Yeah.
Well, they
well,
I've,
vinyl, a good vinyl.
Yeah.
You know, vinyl for
I've built three houses with those guys, and they give me a...
And then are we going to do it,
charge a percentage
spend over the money on screens, or are we thinking about doing that? Or?
Oh, I think this thing that Joe Nettles is doing is something we should continue while we're tell Joe not to worry about number two because we're going to put in new windows.
Yeah.
Let's
right as I put
that.
In the new windows, I'm going to put a little sign that says, don't touch these screens. You need a key.
Well, that's what I put on the page for the
that's
time.
What the
they never read, though. You think
the
kids open the owner's manual? The only thing they use the owner's manual for is kindling when they don't have something to start
that's
a fire with.
Page number four.
No! I've had people comment on
but that. But we should... I, you know, probably do, but anyway, in our annual newsletter, whatever, here's some things we seem to be having repeat problems with.
Right. I agree.
You know, give extra care to that or something, but, I mean, I've never seen a kid go in and out of a window up there, but, you know, Taylor's had a lot of experience with it, and I'm just like, if kids are going in and out of windows, somebody isn't managing the situation very well.
They go in and out of
the garden cabinet. That was
always gone. Yeah, I was going to say just this year we had kids going in and out of the upper window of the cabin on the not porch side because they had her open. They wanted to climb out of the window.
And hang out.
Climbed out of the top of the window.
That's what time out is for.
I pulled into the yard and I saw a kid coming down the deal and went over. It was a group from Big Water. And I said, what are you doing? Oh, we're rappelling or something. There was the screen down on the bottom. It had fallen, hit the porch, and then gone off. I don't believe there's a screen there right now.
That'll be a $600 fine. Keep repelling.
You know what we call Miami windows? Well, they
bars.
They open with cranks like that.
Yeah. The louvered windows.
Well,
yeah.
Okay, whatever you all call them here, but and the screen is on the inside, and
right.
they open with a crank.
Right.
And you're not going to crawl in and out of them.
That's true.
Those things don't keep the cold out worth beans.
Yeah,
the problem
is
that they're just...
I got them in my trailer, and I can attest to that.
They don't keep the cold out.
Cold.
Yeah, plus, we do need a lot of ventilation in the cabins in the summer, I mean, because we don't have a lot of good air conditioning units running. So,
let's get some AC and forget about the screen.
Yeah, what world would that be?
Okay.
Okay. Well, I would say thanks to Linda for putting a list together for us, a beginning point, and
we need to come up with some more improvements.
Oh,
we can
got the action. Redo the screens on number two.
Yep, I got it.
That's a good start.
Yep.
Redo the windows on number two and have Joe continue to rebuild and replace the screens everywhere.
What's the other one that would need windows next?
Besides
besides number two?
Ten.
Ten needs attention.
Oh, ten definitely needs
first.
It.
At that point, it'd be a kind of a toss-up.
Yeah,
two's
the worst. Right.
But we'll do two and find out. At next meeting, we can say it cost this much, how long it took.
All right.
You know, how do you want to do it more?
While you're out there with the ladder.
I noticed that wasn't on cabin one.
That's on number one. That's what I was going to say. I didn't know. I hadn't seen it to see if it had been fixed. No, there's a woodpecker hole.
Oh.
Up on two or three, I can't remember, up high. I think they both have them, actually. There's woodpecker holes. And they've been covered with screen, but they've gone through again.
This thing is the tuna fish can.
Yeah.
Yes,
say,
exactly.
Bottom of a number 10 can.
Yep.
Yep.
That's what I've used.
The side of it pounded out flat.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Well,
coffee can.
Number three.
On number two, they got a woodpecker hole.
Number two and number three, too, I think. Number three is around back. That's when I found the water line. I saw that also up on number three. I don't think I wrote it on there. Maybe I did on number three. Yes, I did on number three. Put screen up to cover holes outside.
I fixed the water line, and it's holding good.
Great. I thought it was a rattlesnake when I stepped off that porch. I went,
somebody put a step over there. And nailed
is that
it
what
down.
Well,
you
can do that.
What was the other one?
It's made out of like treated wood, a step, and nailed it in. I had to pull it off to get to the pipe.
One of the cabins needed replacement of all the steps.
Nailed this step to the side.
Yeah,
of
I saw that.
You fixed the steps.
You fixed the steps.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they great.
Yeah,
I know we had that was.
In fact, yesterday
all
I went and trimmed cabin three because we're touching. I mean, the trees are laying against the cabin. And after being out there with Earl, I thought, the county ordinance now is 100 feet.
100?
Oh, and
wow.
100 feet would, I mean, our cabins would be touching. I don't know. You guys decide what you want to do. I did about 15 to 20, depending on how it faced. I mean, you can see out of the cabin now. That was the people that were in it were taking a nap. I knocked on the door. I said, I'm going to run in a chainsaw. I don't want to wake anybody up. And I just woke them up. But anyway, they had said they'd been staying there for 18 years, coming to that cabin, and they used to have a view, so they were happy to have the view again.
Exactly.
After the oaks went down. But it's pretty hard on equipment to limb and trim because you have to get so low.
The dirt.
And the rock, the duff from those oaks lay over the rocks, and the stem grows through it. So even when you think there's nothing there, just as you go through it, there will be a little bit of cost involved in chains.
Well, that was the first item on this.
Blades, but I did. It does make a difference, and it does make you feel a lot better there. Yeah. Plus, you can see out of the cabin. But what I've decided to do is just when I go up to stock, well, my wife will be gone now, but when she's stocking, I'm limbing and trimming, and you just spend a couple hours each time because you're never going to get, you know, maybe you will, but I've never seen the members show up and say, you know, hi ho. And
right.
So I thought, if we wait for the member, it's not going to get done. So I just did one to see how much time it's going to take. It'll take some time, but I think it's worthwhile time because if you got the duff is that deep up there of dried leaves. The oak that grows out of it, half of them are dead just because they naturally kill themselves. Also, there's a lot of fuel there. Then they go up from there, and it's right, I mean, it's touching the wood.
Right.
So a fire up there would take every
cabin
we've got so
yeah.
far, except maybe cabin one. Actually, there's a cedar tree that gets the porch on number one, so it deserves some attention, but I didn't mean to interrupt.
Was
no,
that
was
number
the
one.
Little fire down by Robinson still burning?
You know what? I don't know what's going on out there, but I came back across from Lick Wash area. There's a white pickups out there. It was before the storm hit. They didn't tell us there was going to be any controlled burn or anything. I was not more than a mile from where this happened, and there's this fire, this plume of smoke. The storm was an hour away yet.
Yeah, 10 minutes.
And I pulled out. I see this truck unmarked, and a fire going. And it's not more than 100 yards in front of the truck. I didn't see the people. I stopped and I backed up and I thought, that's not from a lightning strike, because I mean there's no storm. It was plain as day over and had been all morning. The fire was going pretty good. And I thought, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but do they do controlled burns and then blame them on lightning? Because it was started, they knew the storm was coming. The storm was right there, but it was way before the storm. started the fire and then comes through the storm and the fire.
And it's easier to start them before the storm when it's not wet.
Anyway, that bothered me a little. I asked Brent about it, and he said they hadn't. He gets a report on what they're going to do, and he said there was nothing there.
We saw the smoke last night.
Big plume of smoke, and what do you do about that?
I
know that
fast
light and reported. Either started that fire, or he was the first one on the scene, and he was there faster than I, and I was a mile away. But I got the feeling that the fire
could have an arson.
I don't know what their controlled burn policy is or what they're doing, but I did hear through a different source that there's a big controlled burn scheduled for the Podunk area.
That's where it was. Maybe that's they're getting a head start.
I think they'd notify us.
When I heard that, it kind of confirmed, because when they say Podunk area, is it the lower Podunk, the upper Podunk? Where are they talking?
It heads that direction.
What I heard was from an elk hunter that was upset, saying, you know, they're going to be out there doing a controlled burn and fighting fire and people all over, and that's going to mess us up. And it was supposedly going to be a 10,000 acre burn. I haven't been able to find anybody that can verify that.
Well, Mount Dutton was supposed to be a 3,000 acre burn. It
turned into a 300,000, yeah.
I can't imagine with an urban interface right there. They've got their wooey statutes. We're that close with the ranch. If they don't control it, which they never do, you're going to, I just can't imagine. The ranch should have some entity in there at least stating a protest.
Yeah.
Having a controlled burn that close to cabin.
Would that be BLM or the staircase?
The monument.
The monument staircase. All BLM.
Well, that was on my list that I made for how repairs needed. I put Padokes away from the cabin. I put 20, 30 feet. I didn't know how far.
Well, on the 100 yards, the 100 feet,
this
bigger and bigger, is for, I mean, you can't get a new building permit
without
that. Anything existing, they really can't. They can't force you to cut a tree that's even touched.
Yeah, we're not going to go in and ticket
you,
but
sure,
it's for your
own good. Except the oaks that need to come out and then ladder branches.
They can't mandate that you do it. In some areas, if you don't do it, they'll come in and do it for you and then charge you on your taxes.
Brent was telling me about a place in Reno last month because I asked him, how far do you want me to do these? You're the fire guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he said there was a guy in Reno that took his down to 100 feet and took all the duff off and everything and really cleaned it up. And his neighbors all complained in the area up in the higher heights of Reno because they said, you know, you're making an eyesore here. Well, that's when they had that big fire.
And all their places burned.
Everybody burnt except the guy who did the clearing around his place. And so it just gave a big arrow in the quiver of the people who say do the clearing. But I see those big pretty trees next to the cabins, and I know that if you limb and trim them up substantially,
yeah,
you can leave the tree. But the oak brush, you've got to get that stuff.
That's got to go. I agree. Sounds good.
When anything tall, that's tall, if you limb it up high enough and clean out all the dust, it'll be okay.
That's fine. Well, as long as they don't touch, the canopies don't touch.
But
there we don't really have the problem.
It's all the continuation of the fuel coming up the top of the hill.
I would have put goats there a long time ago, except I don't want goats around when the members are. Thinking this winter when the members go away, we'll go in and put the solar panels
right
up and get them to scrub that down.
Yeah.
But I just don't want to have members and goats.
Bad combination.
I called this last week about the goats for Camp Williams to find out how they manage them to concentrate them. And that's what they do. They put the solar fences around. Did you see how they did that?
Well, and I brought that up because I've been reading about it.
Well, I asked the guy, how much do you charge to do that? Do you know how much they get for goats?
You guys don't want to know.
I couldn't believe it.
$50,000?
They charge $4 to $6 per day per head per goat.
What?
He has three herds of 1,000 goats, Jason, the guy that has it. And I said, just a second.
That's good business.
You're making worth $4,000 to $6,000
a day
to have his goats eating. Eric says, "How much do you charge the ranch you're at?"
Room and board.
He said, "Do you want to lease your goat herd out?" He says, "I can use them. Will you lease them out?" I'm in a different situation, but anyway, goats do quite a little job. the I got on his website and looked at. They do the.
It's
got to
be managed in the right places.
That's it. They take a little fence, they peg it in, they go around the place, throw the goats in there.
Yeah, they just concentrate them in the right areas.
Like running a grinder, you just determine how long you want them to be and how far down you want them to go, and then they move them over.
Does that also take care of predator issues too with the electrified fence?
It helps, but not really.
No, the predator issues. When a predator wants to get in your herd, you can do a lot of things, but a cougar is a very difficult foe. They'll come in the night. They take what they want.
Does your donkey do that for you?
Donkey will handle coyotes.
Because
we put a litter back and chase any coyotes. But
we were up on the Pinks last night and had a picnic and came back down in the dark. And the people that were with us, we wanted to show them the goats. So we turned around and shone the light on there. And here's all these goats bedded down, that old donkey sitting there in the middle of the herd. And I thought there must be a purpose for
that. The donkeys are good with dogs. Their instinct is to go after dogs on the ground in the daylight. But at night when the cats hit, the donkeys don't see them either. Nobody sees them.
Sometimes the
mother of the baby that's taken don't see them.
Mm.
You just find them later. Yeah. Predator issues I've dealt with my entire life. There's just no good way. The best way is to have hounds and tie them out around, and they hear the hounds, they stay out, and the goats stay in. But even then, you know, you get a cat that wants baby goats.
Yeah.
Yummy.
We've been very
lucky. Hit several times, you end up just spending the night out there and
pick
them out. That's really what you got
to do. You get a bear, you have to ride.
Yeah.
Oh, bears don't care about anything.
The only other issue on the budget that I have is this taxing refund.
Return. I have another issue to bring up, but I totally forgot about that until yesterday when I was in the assessor's office.
Well, there's two things we can do, because I called,
okay,
which is what I was supposed to do. I called, and your signature's on the form. And
so
they
I'm
can't
the
tell
one.
Me anything, but your signature can go on an 8821.
To tell them to tell you.
Mm-hmm. So do you want to do that, or do you just want to take because you need this information in order to be able to call them?
I would prefer just to do that and let you handle it.
There you
whenever
go.
I
I'll
remember.
Do it. I don't know what happens if you're not. You want to fill them out and I'll take them?
Yeah.
Then you got a moment.
This is federal?
Yeah.
And what is the federal tax issue?
We double paid.
Actually,
not only, well, usually we have spent. You know, toward the end of the year, that's when we bought the trash trailer. That's when Barbara always tried to prepay Brent Robinson for the next year's gravel. Do whatever we could to empty our funds in a logical way, excuse me, so we don't pay taxes. This year, with all the changes, nobody was knowing what to do or how to do it until it was after the fact. And Niall said, hey, too bad, so sad, you guys got to pay this tax. Well, I don't know whether Barbara paid it once and then you paid it again.
No, it was
you
me.
Just paid it twice.
I just was ignorant. It was me.
Oh gosh.
He handed me this and I paid it
so
for this.
It's getting
then,
closer to the end of the year too. We need to go through a review and scour all this.
Well, that's why I did this today.
And say let's dump this into like say the get the
reserve.
Reserve or get the ranch house paid down to. Buy supplies for that or whatever.
Army
new bat.
Propane light in fall.
Yeah.
Right.
Because you can't get up there in the springtime when you need it.
Yeah. We still have budgeted.
We still have about $4,500 in the budget for propane,
yeah,
too.
Propane.
A lot of expenses that you can prepay.
Right.
But that's why I brought it up in this month.
I will.
We'd be aware of things.
I'll get these
do.
Signed and back to you today before we disperse, and then you can follow that up. The thing I found on taxes, this is kind of an answer. Well, okay, are you done?
On that.
I want to say I really appreciate you. You know, keeping the records in QuickBooks and being able to generate good reports.
I'm learning a lot.
That's important.
Okay, just running down through the little list. We've got a contract back from you signed.
No, it's here.
You've got it. Okay.
We didn't do that.
The IRS deal we'll take care of. You told us about the delinquencies.
No, I didn't.
Nope.
Dirk was gone.
Oh,
so
it's got a report on
so
we
the amount.
6%, but that was it. So who is delinquent? How many?
We have five members that are doing well. We have several that owe money, but the major ones that we were talking about, I went down to the recorder's office, and that was really fun. I like maps and records, so it's like truth. I don't know. I just enjoy going through the books. The ladies in the recorder's office were laughing at me.
but I've got the information on them, and we have...
These are the four that are more than 1 year delinquent.
Mm-hmm. We have a deed of recommission, which is the change that was on one of them. We have a notice of a lien on another, but these are all done when Barbara did them. I haven't done anything on those. The big one that Mr. Halstead account, he has paid for it. I talked to them yesterday. That money has gone across. It just hasn't been recorded because of the deed. We have a notice of default and a notice of lien. The lien is 22606 on that property. And
the deed hasn't been recorded.
It hasn't been recorded.
Who has the deed?
Fry has paid Halstead for that lot. And assume Halstead still carries it because it's in his name.
So all we know is Fry and Halstead both say that the money exchanged hands, but no deed has been recorded.
Right, because of the lien.
And who? Fry says he's not recording the deed because of the lien?
Well, because of the lien, they haven't done anything on that.
I mean, that doesn't stop a deed from being recorded.
Okay. That's all I know. And the reason I found out about this is because I called one of our ladies that had been nominated. She said she couldn't do it, but she was concerned about some of the things that were happening, and it was this Fry Halstead situation.
Yeah.
So we talked at length about it. She said that he just wants to get into the property. He did it that way because he liked where the property was. He was hoping to just pay the back assessments and not have to pay all the interest and things that was accrued on it. We had that discussion already in this forum about all of that, and I reported that to them, but she even had nominated him for the board because he wants to be that involved. He's a contractor. He's interested in helping the board. He did the roads up in their area where this lot number 12 is. They did some work up there on the roads. And
I'll see him today.
Oh, okay. So you know Fry?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I didn't know you did. Well, anyway, he was just hoping...
Randy, right? Randy?
Yes. Yeah. He was just hoping to pay the back assessments, not have to pay all the interest, be done with it so he can...
No,
I'll
tell him.
That.
No, sorry.
Okay. Yep.
Somebody has to pay for it.
But
do we?
Paid,
okay.
He has paid Halstead.
The amount that we had filed on there in the lien was 2 years ago amount.
Yeah, he has to bring it current.
Yeah, but do we or should we is there a process where we go in and
I checked with Barry, and there is a process, but it's not necessary. Whenever we record liens, we should make sure that we use a language that says something to the effect.
This is the amount now, but it's ongoing.
Right.
And that is in the...
And so when you go through and do a title search, the main thing is you're just going to see the recorded lien. You're going to know the title is clouded. That doesn't prevent somebody from changing hands or recording new deeds.
Just they take on the debt.
It's just that they take on the debt. Usually what happens is they do the title search, they find there's a lien, and they would ask the previous owner to clear that up before they consummate the purchase.
Right.
Apparently, he didn't do a title search or whatnot, but apparently...
Well, I notified him that there was a lien on the property.
Yeah, apparently they had some knowledge of that and probably felt like he got a good enough buy on it that he was willing to try to wrestle through that. So,
Bob, do you want to take that with
But I would say he's in a very precarious position if he's paid for it and not recorded the deed.
What is our option? What's the next step that we do? Just sit and wait?
Foreclose on the lot and take it back and force it to go to sheriff's sale. I mean, if we wanted to be, that's
the step.
Well, let's
let Bob talk.
See what we can do to work with him
first. And let him know where we stand on.
I'm not saying we should do that. I'm just saying that's our ultimate avenue why we record liens in the first place.
Yeah, this is only good to 2005.
Did I just give you the first half? Yep, I did. This is bad information. Let me write it down, and I'll give you both then. Sorry.
So anyway, it's kind of his decision that whenever you pick up title to something and you don't force that to be
resolved. I think we're willing.
And that's his responsibility.
We need to let him know where he stands. I think we would work with him on... if he wants to pay a third and a third.
He may want to go back to Halstead.
Yeah, we can work on maintenance or whatever. Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
But that's not our issue.
Okay. Okay. I'll work that out.
Okay.
That's the last. The final. That's an over.
Final. Final. All done.
I am.
Okay. Make sure.
No, I guess not. What is my next step?
On these other.
On these four. Yes.
At what point do we decide to say?
2 years.
I think our policy should be whenever they're late on the second year's assessment. So they're now late 14.
So we send them another letter and say, we're going to do this.
That's what we've done.
Yeah. When you're 14 months late, we record a lien. Because, you know, if you're 14 months late, something odd is going on.
Yeah.
And the lien protects us. And usually if somebody's 14 months late, they may be, you know, also considering selling or other things. And the real danger is we don't record the lien.
Before the sale.
Or a sale.
Yeah.
So we don't want to get things, you know, really backed up. And so I think that's just an automatic thing. 14 months late, gets recorded. My personal opinion is we should work with somebody like Barry, give him the stuff, let him record them so that if there's future legal battles, it's all groundwork laid. But I don't have real strong feelings about that. I just think that it ought to be done.
I have the paperwork here to do that. We have a lien on Halstead. We have a lien on Roll. We have a trustee's deed we have a notice of default from January of 2005 on Billy Terrell, and then a trustee's deed that was put through in 11 of 2005. I don't know what a trustee's deed is. What is that?
Who's it from?
Billy Terrell.
Is that Lot 10?
Yeah.
That went into sheriffs. That went into
did it?
Yeah.
That went into auction. No.
Right.
So then they bought it back again because we still got his name on it.
Yep.
So what happens there?
Well, so they put the auction and they bought it back again, but didn't they pay then?
No. Nope.
So when it goes into the auction, don't we get the first chunk of it, right?
If we'd be doing things with the legal recourse process, the minimum bid that anybody should be able to tender would have been
the
back lien.
That's right.
And maybe we did.
However, we're not there to say we represent the minimum bid, then, you know, that process may have been averted.
Knowing Barbara, she was probably there, but if it did go to sheriff, then so.
Well,
so then it should have been brought current at that point.
Yeah, because then it would have been paid at the sale.
Right.
That was like the whole point.
Yes.
I'll check that out.
So,
and then Richard Davis.
And maybe Barbara knows about that. I don't know. Taylor.
One of those
Bay
Area guys.
Now, is this the law?
Don't have membership attached to it.
I think Ted
has
membership.
He had two lots.
Yeah, the 27. 27 doesn't have a membership, and he has both those lots. Yeah,
they do. I mean, association.
Right. But I mean, that's not the issue.
No,
but in my opinion, that's why I think when we get to that point, we turn it over to our attorney. He files liens.
And he plays with it.
He or she.
Richard Davis has a deed of recommission. What is that? Do you know?
A deed of recommission. Who was it?
Richard Davis.
What lot?
137.
So is that?
This dates back to 2005.
John?
Is that John's brother? Is that Richard?
Yeah. John's brother, Richard. And what is it?
Deed of recommission. So that would just be changing hands?
Might be,
yeah.
Okay. So we've had nothing on him, and we've done nothing on, we've done nothing on Turley. Turley's lot, which is 62, has been tossed back and forth between him and other family members because there's a whole, quick claim deed.
Yeah. One of the things that Barry said in particular, we don't care about anything other than who's on the title.
That's right.
So we have to be real careful. For example, my lots are in Manzanita Properties on Dirk Clayson. You record something under Dirk Clayson, lot 301, and it's not enforceable.
Okay.
So that's another reason why, you know, if we turn it over to the process, they'll validate all the checks and balances and make sure that it's done right.
Okay, so then should I give all of these to Barry?
That'd be my vote.
That a motion?
Second.
By Dirk, second by Dustin, and approved unanimously by the board.
So three of them or four? Three?
Five.
Five? Okay.
And should I send them all a notice of what they own first? Or
sure.
Send it to Barry first?
If you haven't sent them notices, I personally wouldn't send them a last chance. I'd just send them notices and informing them that that's what's going to happen. You know, going to happen unless it's resolved in the next 15 days or something like that.
Okay, so
probably a good idea.
Send them a letter. Tell them it's going to legal if it's not resolved.
But go ahead
and
do it anyways.
15 days and...
Yeah.
Maybe like since it goes to Barry, you know,
it's not reversible. There's no negotiation.
Right.
Right.
It's only got 15
days. They're going to be paying at that point in time their fees, their interest, and the legal
and the
recording
legal.
Fees
okay.
and various other things. And so.
Okay.
Now, is Barry an attorney?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's his last name?
Clarkson.
He's been doing it.
But and you could maybe put that in the letter that you know you'll be incurring some additional legal fees if it's not resolved.
Okay. Then I will wait to do anything on Halstead, Randy Fry's, until I call Mr. Becker.
Oh, sorry.
I will wait to do anything with Randy Fry's until I hear from you.
Okay, but I'm going to tell him that if this doesn't get resolved, it's going to the attorney.
Yes, he can do
right.
Okay. And
we're giving him his last. I'm giving him his last chance, basically, physically, rather than sending a letter. You sending the letter.
Right.
Is that correct?
Right.
Okay.
And by resolved, what we mean is
paid. Paid the $22,36.08. Yeah.
Well, sometimes when people think, if you resolve this, it's not going to the attorney. Well, if that means if I call and we talk a little bit, then we're going to come to agreement.
Pay it, or it's going to the attorney.
Pay the man.
Pay us now, or pay us later.
Right.
Okay. Ranch liability insurance.
That's right here. I can look through it.
This is a new...
This is everything that I've got on ranch liability and auto insurance. And as you look at the names, the auto insurance is the liability and farmers is the auto.
Auto owner's insurance is
liability
and farmers is the vehicle.
Is the vehicle.
What does that liability cover as far as the ranch?
I don't know. I haven't had time to read through it.
There's always people peeling around out in the horse pens and I can't keep on. There's, you know, I leave the property, I come back and there's 20 kids out there wanting to pet a horse. What if one of them gets kicked in the head while they're petting a horse?
And another reason to have a reserve.
My policy covers
if we have a legal battle.
Not horseback.
Well, the attorney of the insurance should cover that, though.
Not always. And you also, that doesn't cover legal, all our legal expenses.
I just want to know if in there it covers that, because I don't want to be personally liable for the kids going back in the place.
Here they are, the horses, yeah.
Yeah, that'll come after you, too.
Find out. That's very important to me.
How about your insurance? Does it cover that?
My insurance covers what I feed them, what they do on the horseback ride, anything. As soon as they come up to me and say, I want a horseback ride, they sign a deal and they're on my turf. But a horse just standing in a pen and a little girl goes in there and grabs it by the tail. I mean, those kids, they have no clue what they're doing. They walk right up behind things and I'm forever going, gee, Jed.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a fence to keep a horse in, so there's clearly not a fence to keep a kid out. And I'm trying to make the fences that we put in such a way that they'll make a barrier around there. But I do need to know about the liability.
Do you know, Linda, on dates on this, when is it?
It's all paid up. The liability insurance, well, the auto insurance is paid up until June of 08, which we went, I think, $400, $500 over budget on that, but that's into next year, so it's okay. And the liability insurance is paid up for, I think, a year also as of 2 months ago. So we're current on them. I have not read the policy, so I just...
So I will try...
You want to take that and do it, or you want me to read through it and...
Who's the agent?
I can send you... Agent?
Who's the agent on the...
On the liability on the ranch, the agent is in Salt Lake.
I think it's Nat Hunter.
That's who it was years ago.
You know, a lot of the times, I think...
He sent me a complete policy there. I just
you might want to just call them up and say, hey, here's six questions that we have, and
And,
I can do that.
Can you show us what they are?
Yeah, they should be able to tell us.
I'll think I'll
give you 20 more questions right after you hang up.
And the vehicle is through
Farmers.
Farmers.
Yeah, Jeff Yates. And Ken Lent's vehicle is on it. Has it been inspected yet? Okay, we are out now on that paper.
Overdue.
Uh-huh.
The paper plate.
I can inspect it today. It's here.
Okay.
Does Mike do inspections?
He does.
And he said he'd do that one. The day we had the window put in, he was supposed to inspect it. He didn't. The guy put in the window, and I drove off thinking it had been inspected.
Yeah, well, he didn't know.
So I can take it by and have him inspect it.
Have him keep the papers for the inspections, because I won't get by you today, but I'll pick them up on Monday. And then
I always tell him to keep them.
If you want to...
I don't want to, but I will.
Okay. Because I would like to read through it, but I don't have time in the next month to even look at it, so...
I am learning so
it'll
much
just
that
be
you
another...
guys don't get to learn because I'm doing it, so this is okay.
Yeah.
I can do it.
You can hold it over us.
That's right.
Okay, well, that's kind of the first block of stuff done.
I have two more questions.
Okay.
Two of the assessments that we have not received are from the money. There was some discussion on this about 5 months ago. I think it was even before you guys came in.
My vote on that was just to kind of be quiet and let it go delinquent and then foreclose on it.
And take the money.
I'm very much opposed to...
Are they delinquent more than 14 months?
No. Just this year. But why do they have lots?
They bought lots from two members.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Oh, well, then I should send them a bill.
Yeah.
No, that I thought we, like, gave them...
They've been paying it. It's kind of...
If we haven't sent them a bill, that's a problem.
Yeah.
I send them one. Sit on it and
they're just like any other...
Well, what happened was even when they made the purchase... At the very beginning, they kind of balked it. We want to buy these lots because they're trapped in the monument association. We're going to buy them, but not pay. And whoever the office manager was said, well, I'll pay it personally, and we'll use the cabins. And that's kind of like Taylor said.
BLM, I mean, they have to use it personally. They've actually used it first year to actually have personnel.
Yeah.
Nobody's used it this year, so... Okay.
But they've been paying it out of special account, secret black ops fund.
Any cash accounts, they don't have to keep track of
it.
Yeah.
Washington, D.C. doesn't know where the money went.
Okay.
Which I have a fundamental problem with.
With them owning.
Owning private property. Right. They wanted to buy it, get it, and then just assimilate it, suck it into the monument ground, which it can't. It's private ground. It's private property. It can never become.
You could do a trade.
Well, you could do a trade. There's different ways to do it, or decree Congress, but that's about it, you know.
And they're willing to trade.
They're willing, but not. They did
a lot years ago, but because of progression of our wonderful society, things are complex.
And they keep changing their real estate
representative.
And so, I mean, something out, they...
Start over.
With the old BLM office, there wasn't a problem. There were a lot of it. Now that the state agent in charge of BLM is now what they call this. Oh. All right,
well,
then I'll just send them a
bill. Send them a bill and let's see how it goes. Which reminds me, I had one member call me that said, hey, I've never received a bill this year, and he still got this call for nominations a month ago. Kurt Measley over in Porterville.
Yeah.
That his notice for that went to Phoenix. And I know we've changed the address a couple of times. And
well, I would like his new address because, yeah, that's something I don't have.
He called me. I was in St. George.
He's in Orderville?
Yes.
I can look it up.
Either Orderville or Glendale. And I wrote it down. Yep.
You're right. He hasn't gotten it.
And he said, I'm going to quit it, but I just haven't got a bill, and so whenever I...
That's true. It's going somewhere.
It's going to Phoenix. It's going to Phoenix. And he said, well, the assessment never got to him. He just said, this last call for nominations went to Phoenix. It forwarded up to me, which is crazy because he's been up here for well over the normal forwarding mail type.
Okay.
Deal. But anyway, that's one we, if you can...
So should I put this in the interim or just the original assessment?
If we get him the bill, how can you charge him interest?
Right.
Well, but isn't it his responsibility to call the ranch and say, hey, I've moved?
He did. He called Larry.
Oh, and I think
isn't that after the fact?
Well, this call was.
Right?
I think he has notified us.
I don't think he's. But if he's notified us and we screwed up, then no, yeah, we shouldn't be responsible. He shouldn't be responsible.
I think it's in our system somehow. Because I know when we first mailed out the call for nominations back in March or whenever we did it, that's one that I pulled and we changed. And so how it's, you know, whether
so the system got screwed up.
Anyway, that reminded me of that one. There's also another woman that I'll have to check and see if I can come up with her name that called me a week ago to say, we're still getting information and we've sold our lot.
Yeah, I think I know who that is. And
I called her and left her three messages saying, I mean, I don't recognize your name. We'd love to get it changed, but... So who did you sell to?
Yeah, I think I corrected that one because I got that in call also from a lady.
And we can, you tell me what lot it is and we'll find out. It's, thank goodness, all on computer now. So we should be able to get those answers for you in a minute.
Well, I'll show you how to look it up. You need to know that. Just, you know, for...
There's a website?
Yeah, there's a website.
Cool.
And so when I find out this thing... from Niall and come and talk to you about that. I'll show you how to do it on the website.
Okay. That would be great. I'll check into Beasley, and if I have that Phoenix address, I'll get a hold of him up north if he's got a regular landline.
You know, just one caveat is probably some people have told us an address that's different than what the recorder's office is. So
I know, like...
If that's working, we should be responsible for that.
Bob Maurer, Greg Maurer, and they've got a lot that I haven't gotten any response on, but I can't get a hold of them. I mean, they've got the same address on two lots, one's been paid, one hasn't. And it's in Laverkin, but their phone numbers are Nevada, so I've got some discrepancies on my record. So any of those that you hear about, then I'll be glad to do that. So that's good. Okay.
All right, before we go jumping on to the next thing, there's a couple of things I want to just bring people up to speed on. This past week, I've spent quite a bit of time trying to track down and chase down our relationship with the Pawtucket Landowners Association, which is the mule deer tags situation with the state of Utah. Monday of this week, I got a letter in my mail that was typed from their office on the 11th of June. Mailed and stamped at the post office on the 15th, and it was in my mailbox Monday, which was kind of comical other than in the letter it said, your application for this next season needs to be turned in by August 9th. Well, if you go on the calendar, Monday after the 9th, so I was in a panic. And so I drove on my way to the ranch and from the ranch three different trips this week. I went up through Glendale because I couldn't get a hold of Mickey Houston or Bruce Bunting or Roger Chamberlain, members of that board, trying to catch up to them to say, hey, what's going on? Luckily, I wasn't in a huge panic because I'd run into Mike Noel in our post office, and I noticed the two envelopes in his hand were addressed to the Pawtucket Landowners Association, so I assumed his company also. Oh, I finally tracked him down day before yesterday, and learned that they had sent out a second letter
in July. That letter also said that we should receive our check in mid-July. Well, we haven't seen anything. The second letter that was sent in July, which I still haven't received, said we're postponing the application until August 17th. And so I was able to, you know, when I got the first stuff, I got tax notices from Linda. Anyway, to make kind of a long story short, I went through, had everything, maps, tax notices, everything ready, except the application, because I had never received it. They were going to email it to me. They didn't, so I tracked the guy down, Roger Chamberlain, actually just yesterday, put it all together, and that's when I noticed, for years, Barbara's been putting it all together, just, you know, following their instructions, but every year we've submitted a certain number of acres, and they've rejected a few. And we didn't really know why, and it never added up. Not that it would have made a big difference, because if you know how they count irrigated and harvested alfalfa ground in one increment, 20-acre parcels, and open rangeland was 640-acre chunks. And we were turning in, association ones, 2,020 acres. That's what we would turn in. They would always discount it and kick back 1,860 acres. So there was 160 acres that was always thrown out. We didn't worry
off
about
the
it.
The original amount, or was that accrued each year?
Off the original amount, every application.
Okay.
And it didn't make a big difference because it wouldn't have given us enough to qualify for the next jump. But I always wondered what that was, and I assumed that it was isolated lot up in the head of Slide Canyon and the two in Crawford Canyon and the one up above Podunk, because they were isolated and they weren't counting them, and I assumed they had discounted a certain amount of acreage around the cabins and a certain amount of acreage at the headquarters. So that's why I just always thought, and that's, you know, Barbara and I had discussions about that two or three different times. Well, come to find out, when I started looking at it and actually had the tax notice in hand and figuring it all out of what was discounted and seeing what the tax status was on each. Even our common ground, most of you know that it fits into a puzzle of about three large chunks, up in the upper meadow, right through the Broad Hollow area, and then right down at the ranch headquarters. But there's 15 different parcels that make up those three groups. And so you've got a tax notice of 20 acres and 80 acres and 120 acres. The one isolated 160-acre parcel has always been on the tax rolls as agricultural ground versus the farmland accessible. And I started figuring out, well, why is it that way? One thing's changed. The Pawtucket Landowners Association now divides things up in groups of 160 acres instead of 640 acres. That's a unit. Doesn't make a big difference to us on the total, but each unit 160 acres, so that individual piece that they've discounted gives us one more unit of qualification. So I went to the assessor's office.
I'll bet you they're taking out those individual
ones
that we have.
It's actually, if you look in section 14, right down there, right by the cabin, there's a sliver, 160 acres.
Okay.
That piece right there,
that's the one that's
taxed as agricultural ground. And everything else is taxed as farmland. Well, it was a mistake. It was an error made. It's never been put on Greenbelt, and everything else had. So I got the application. It will mean the difference that we've been taxed on that sliver about $500 per year. If it had been on the right tax status, it would have been about $15 a year.
Oh, can we go back?
No. And it's too late this year to get on for this stat, but I have to apply right now beyond next year. The difference it will make is from that point on, we'll be paying $20 a year for that piece instead of $500. That changes us from 1,860 to 2,020 acres of qualifying ground for the Pawtucket situation, the deer situation. So that's a big plus. But it's just simply that something that was missed, and because we've had three different people handling three different things, no one has ever had all the information in front of them at one time to say, oh, okay, well, why? So that's a little bonus that'll work out better for us in the future.
But I did get the applications and everything in. They had a meeting last night, and we're supposed to sign checks, and so we should receive a check in the mail this next week from
money we get for
this year.
And the budget last year was $4,000.
Yeah. I do not know the amount.
We don't get any tags,
right?
No. No. No, they don't do that anymore.
It should be nice.
They did. The association
choose to get the tags instead.
Nope.
No.
You can opt out and get
nothing.
The tags are issued to the Pontotoc Landowners Association, which is the group we belong to with 160 other applicants. The state issued X number of tags to that group, and it's varied from 14 to 35 over the years. That group originally divvied them up on a basis of saying, okay, you 168 applicants, based on your land and your pay, whatever you got, you qualify for X number of units. And to fill everybody's need with the number of tags that were issued, it took about a five-year cycle to go through.
Yeah.
And one year you'd get one, one year you'd
get
two, one year you'd get none. Some guy gets seven every single year because he's got a lot of hay ground or, you know, whatever it was. What happened was individuals were taking those tags, individual ranches, and selling them.
Mm-hmm.
Some were selling them for $1,500, and others were selling them for $5,000, depending on who they had cultivated as a client or what their willingness to work with somebody was. Deer Springs, the Seeps Ranch, two or three ranches over in Tropic and Cannonville had developed, you know, a little bit better attitude toward the hunting community and were making pretty good money. Tags were going at that time, which we've completely, I mean, the world's changed, but at the time, the average was about $2,500, and there were a half dozen or more that were getting $5,000, $5,500, or $6,000 for tags. So when they took them away and said, we're going to not issue them out to individuals, we're going to sell them all, auction them off, and then put the pile of money in the pot.
And then divide it.
And then divide the money according to your share. As a group, everybody made out better on the average. But there were individuals that the first year or two, instead of making $5,500 or $6,000 for the units we qualified for, it dropped us down to about $4,200, I think, was one year. And so somewhere around the $4,000. Since then, the price on tags have gone from $2,500, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $9,000, $12,000. This last year, the low sold at $11,500 and the high sold at
$19,500.
Oh, so that Pontotoc Landowners Association now has an income of about $250,000 a year.
Wow.
Versus 5-6 years ago, it was, you know, we're squabbling over $20,000.
And that is still divvied up.
And now it's $250,000, and it is divvied up. But what has happened, as the money's got bigger, everybody else's eyes have got bigger, and the people that were not participating before but do have viable land on the Pontotoc looked at it and saw this pot getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and so more applications have gone in to split the pot thinner slice on. So Deer Springs, we don't have anything more to offer. I mean, there's nothing we can do. Some have said, well, let's do something to increase what chunk we can get. That can never happen. Our chunk is only going to get smaller and smaller. I mean, if we put in a...
How about the Heatons and Elton that run the deer hunting? They're not part of that?
They're not part of it. That's a different, a whole separate unit. They established, in those days, it was called a...
Private hunting unit.
Now it's called a Cooperative Wildlife Management Unit, the CWMU.
So they kind of grandfathered...
They just branched off on their own and went to the state. They were the first ones to go to the state and say, we are going to organize this program, this is what we'll do, and this is how it'll work.
Deer Springs can't do that.
Is there a way we could apply to do that, if we wanted to get into that?
We could...
We're probably not big enough on our own to get anything of much...
Well, it's a matter of how much are we willing to put in.
Yeah.
Right now, realistically... We're doing nothing for this money.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. If it's $50 or $5,000, we're doing nothing for it. If we want to... Really. Yeah, and that's what I told these guys. The ruling and the way you even get to apply is, I mean, there's some pretty good language in there about impact on the deer herd.
And I kind of had a problem saying, you know, is Deer Springs really detrimentally impacted? We're not losing a huge amount of crop ground or anything. But when I talked to the guy, he said, no, that doesn't – you do not necessarily have to suffer damages. You have to be providing something that is beneficial to the deer herd, which we are – I mean, that's one of the places they live. So
water.
Water
than anywhere.
Well, there have been two or three kind of Puritan ranchers that go, you know, I've prayed about it, and I just don't believe I've been suffering damages, and so they've withdrawn from the Ponsagon. If the money we receive doesn't at least compensate us for our aggravation, our broken locks, our torn down gates, that type of thing, then...
Strange vehicles, I have to stop and say,
sure.
Who are you?
Fine. But I think we can continue to enjoy whatever income is there and cultivate it more.
We don't get to shoot that straight eight that's in the upper meadow right now. That's a big...
Well,
big
the way you handle that is we can sell trespass permits for anyone that bought one of these tags, anyone that drew a state of Utah tag, we can allow them exclusive rights or grant them permission and charge a trespass fee or a trophy fee. And we do that through...
You have to have a guide.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's the way we've set it up in the past is anybody that's on Deer Springs legally hunting has to be with either, it's been in the past, the manager or myself, just because they don't
know what's going on in the ranch.
Yeah.
Where the...
You wouldn't want shooting in the upper battle with it doesn't know where the cabins are.
Well, and by our association with the Ponsagon Landowner Association, we have to allow them to hunt our 2,000 acres. But you know good and well somebody comes in and hunts. Are they going to be on our 2,000 acres? But they may be off through some of the other private, which isn't a problem unless individual members have said, I absolutely do not want a soul on my place. Or, you know, whatever the issue it happens to be. There's no way any stranger is going to even know, am I on Dirk Gleason's property? Am I on Bob Becker's property? Am I on BLM? Am I on Monument? Half the time, our members think they're on ranch property when they're on Monument.
Okay.
So, another quick thing. Alan Steed has been out there, and I talked to some that were here earlier. He has done some pond repair at the upper border of us in the forest. He's done the repair on fish pond number 3 and repairing the erosion between 1 and 2. Some of that work he's doing as a benefit or blessing to the ranch in exchange for the whatever aggravation or the right to stay there and camp. He has asked for me to bring up with everybody today, not really everybody, the board. I mean, that's one thing I wanted to point out. This is a board meeting, and you guys are our lovely guests. He would like to know if we would be willing to allow him to leave his trailer there through the winter, which would, one, give him more incentive to be back out there next year to continue doing work if there's work available. He has had a couple of offers from members to move it and put it on their lots or to actually sell it to somebody out there just to make
that
have
blue trailer.
I don't know. Well, it's white, I think.
White.
No, that's the horse camp. That's Ollie's saddlery. It's where cabin 5 and 5A was.
It's about a 50-foot house trailer type thing.
It's fairly well hidden. I mean,
right.
Okay, and I've been up there.
There's some pros and cons. I mean, they have had somewhat of an impact. They've been blamed for other things that, when we get digging down to it, they really haven't been the sole source of aggravation, but part of it with four-wheelers and traffic.
I would say probably the biggest drawback to having right there is on the water system. That's
right.
A very struggling water system. I have to pump every other day for an hour to keep water in it. That hose that runs up there has leaks.
Enough leaks in it.
I'm very split, and it's not my decision.
Well, I talked to him about that, especially with the water, and he said he would be more than happy to pay for some fuel to because he said, I know that you've pumped.
It's not the fuel. It's the, I have to go up there every other day for an hour and find things to do while that thing runs, and I can't run off on it.
Well, that's one thing that we possibly could have even talked to him or one of his wives to say,
well,
hey,
pick
that on and let it run
you
for
know
an hour.
Alan's great. I like Alan. I know he's doing good work for the ranch. There's obviously ATV issues that you can't solve because he doesn't know where 40 kids are at one time either. I mean, the other day I ran one off the meadow, and the kid looked at me like I was a Martian because I said, stay off the grass. There's no grass to stay off of. But, I mean, he's chewing up the crown heads of it on the forward of it. Alan's very nice. He's good with the members. He's doing a lot of work for the members. If there's a member that wants him to stay on their ground, that probably is a good option for him because he'd get to be around and he'd have to come up with his own water situation.
Yeah.
That's the biggest trouble is we have just a 10,000-gallon tank with a little 4,000 backup. And when the cabins are loaded, they take them. Now, after fixing that leak, it's been a lot better. That leak, because of where it was, we couldn't really meter how much it was losing. This was an lot of water, and it was increasing.
Yep.
And the thing is it wouldn't stop. We turned off everything there was to turn it off, and it wouldn't turn off even to fix it. So I dug down, and I blew in that thing till I pushed the water back, and then before the stuff would come back, I did the primer, and then I waited for it to run over. And I blew in it. I won't tell you the story. It was quite a little magic to get that sucker together, but it held, and it's holding beautifully. However, the water, it's only so much water that comes out of that little solar thing, about a gallon a minute.
Yeah.
And it goes up there, and it stacks up. You know, it keeps it trooping. But it only takes, he was washing his dump truck the other day.
Fill that up. We talk about that.
Brent knows about it. It was one of the members that reported it. How long does it take for that thing to go down? So if there's a member that wants the housing, it's probably better for the water.
Maybe we should suggest that.
I don't care either way. Those are the facts. I think Alan does a wonderful job. I'm willing to deal with the headaches for the happiness, but there are some things that cost time and
money. Right.
It's a vacation spot for him in the summer.
That's all right.
And
family. Yep.
I'm
going to turn on the air back here.
The thing I have a problem with is that they're using all the facilities that are association members' facilities that we pay for to be in the association that we participate in, and they're using them and using them on a daily basis all summer long.
I told him that was part of the whole dilemma was that all of us have paid a price and pay an annual fee to enjoy and use, which most of us don't, what he's doing every day, and so some people have some pretty good heartburn over that. So.
And I don't know if there's anybody, I mean, if they're saying that they're not, I've seen them out there fishing. We went up there one day, and they were fishing there for 4 hours.
One big group that got blamed on him was another family that resembles his very closely because of similar religious backgrounds. That was up there working for Phil Hall. He's had other groups, and Alan said, "Hey, I knew I was going to get blamed for it, but that's not my clan."
Well, then Phil Hall needs to address.
Well, that's the other issue.
Last year,
I've never received any.
Last year, but not this year.
Last year,
I haven't got anything this year.
The other issue was if Alan moves his stuff over to a private person's lot, then it really doesn't change the impact on
just
the association.
On the water system,
no.
Unless he hauls water from our system.
Yeah.
How's he going to get water?
Can we cut off that water situation and make him haul water out of the where everybody else does down at the headquarters?
Well, isn't his question leaving it there over the winter?
Yeah.
Which
would be
leaving it there abandoned over the winter.
Right.
Sounds like maybe a greater question is if we would allow it to be there next summer.
Exactly.
Well, that's really what he's asking. If he wants it there over the winter, he's planning to be next summer.
That's
so
right.
He needs to address
the advantage of having him there.
The situation that you want to be permanent because it's going to get more and more so.
Yeah.
Why didn't he buy a lot? I think he should buy a lot.
He talked about that a little bit at one. I mean, kind of thinking about it, but.
He really wants to. I mean, he ought to. I mean, how many summers has he been there already? And he's planning. He told me he just loves it up there, and he's a wonderful fellow.
I know.
I don't have an issue at all with.
Yeah.
but the, his collateral damage is, it impact, well, I'll tell you this, it's more impactful to the ranch than any other single member on that entire ranch. Nobody uses more, is, has more people there, does to the fishing pond, to the water system, to the roads, to the ATV issues. If I had to isolate it, more than...
Oh, and that's another
maybe
issue.
We say no ATVs.
I think the impact on the roads has been the trucks, which that's our members, hiring him to haul.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just recreational. He doesn't drive it down the dump truck.
The thing is, though, he also does more for the ranch in the way of fixing roads and messing around. I don't know, what did he charge to do that upper collection
upper
right there by there?
We owe him about $4,000 for the work he's done.
That little...
No,
well, that's
in the pond. Too.
That's the upper deal,
digging
the third
pond.
Fish pond.
What if we told him his charge for rent was that they needed to maintain the water system up there through the period that they're there?
When we maintain it.
Go
pump
down
the water
and pump the water, check it every day, and do the things that Holly's doing.
I don't think you'd want to start giving responsibilities like that, your water situation responsibilities to that.
Because then if the cabins have no water and they come to me, I go, oh, well, that's his job.
Yeah, no.
And
you don't want to do that.
Not there.
You
no, you got to have it.
A timer pump.
Well, it's on a solar system, and it only pumps a certain amount. And
it's not about the
low.
Cost of the water that they use. It's the, we only have that spring only feeds in so much water. You have to check the lower tank. If it's up, that means the solar pump can pump it up. Then you have to check the upper tank when it's full for our overflow. We're just trying to keep the 4,000-gallon tank full in case of a fire, so we try to feed off of the main tank and not the overflow. But it's very sensitive. That's like watching a chess game up there.
Do we need a bigger tank?
Well, yeah, we need a lot of things on the ranch.
Oh,
but
well,
right
I mean,
now,
then we
tank
allocate.
The tank is
for four cabins, it ought to be.
Those cabins have
yeah.
With the leak,
that's all we had was this.
4,000.
Well, and with the leaks fixed and no hose running up to that place, it probably would do the cabins. Because when there's no one there, example, when everybody's there, that's when it gets taxed. But with them plus the extra down there.
And I would say, let's just bar use of the water in there. If they want to haul water or whatever, they got to go down to the
What did
the
they
main
do for their septic?
I have
no idea.
No, that's one reason we kind of looked at. If the tank came in, the tank helped, and they said, you know, this tank here is fine, as long as, you know, since you haven't got no septic systems right now, just put a septic system in that area.
Wouldn't be
well,
too
what
long.
Do for, what does
what?
The beach do for their...
They got a septic system in there.
For their...
Their traders. I mean, the state doesn't know
do they haul it out?
No. They got a leach field on the backside.
Yeah, that's something I hadn't even thought about.
I mean, I'm not concerned about our spring getting extended. It's far enough away, but the state would probably say it's not far enough away for water.
But that's why we didn't end up building
that's,
on
that's
five.
That's the reason we ended up not building there.
Because of the septic.
The spring is adequate.
To
for the amount of water we need there. If it's, you know, if it's like this.
And maybe we just say, you got to go somewhere else.
That ought to be...
That's probably not a good area, and we need to designate a different area.
Let's just tell them, no, we don't want the trailer there during the winter, and just...
And we don't want to stay
there. That right now.
Well, what if we had... If you can't let him back next year, it's ridiculous to make him haul it out, then haul it back.
No, we don't. Maybe not.
Yeah, but I don't... Wouldn't it be better if they had some place more down by the airstrip that we allowed them to be at or something where we got a bigger water tank and we got, you know.
Why don't you tell them they can use the association lot in Podunk or up?
No.
No.
I mean, are we supposed to buy a place to stay? I mean, he has, you know.
There's plenty of members that let him stay on their lot that don't, I mean, he's even said that.
Working out.
Yeah.
Well, and he also had talked with Brent Fulmer some. Evidently, it's one or two people that want to buy or would buy. I don't know if they're wanting to, or he's just saying, hey, if I can't stay there, then I'm going to sell it to somebody. And there's been offers or willing people.
Buy his trailer?
Buy the trailer.
I would say if the impact is that great, then we need to say you got to go somewhere else. We got to figure out another designated area by us.
I don't mind trying to find out.
For that many people.
Find out.
Yeah, it's not a good idea either.
You know, a place where contractors, any contractors, could stay for temporary basis, but it should be, you know, more down by where the gravel pit is or. It's kind of
the only trouble is there, that's where he had it before, is you see it coming and going, and I mean, he has no privacy, but everybody, you know, even the equipment that it took us how many years to get Brent Robinson to move that equipment off of there, people didn't like coming out and seeing the albatross there.
And Alan did get that moved last week.
What?
Oh, so Brent didn't move?
No, Alan did.
So, I mean, that's where they were before, but you know, that creates a whole other issue.
Alan moved it, and Brent sent me a note to say he was moving it, and then evidently Brent came up the day he was moving it, not to move it, but just came up and was kind of, I don't know if he's mad or upset, but just...
Why are you moving it?
Well...
He told you and me in the truck.
Well,
I'll move it this week.
Alan told me that his comment was, oh, God, that just ruined my... shot my credibility, and I didn't want Brent to feel like we'd all, I hadn't given him any direction to do it, but he got tired. He couldn't pull his dump truck underneath it. It's too low. He couldn't go underneath there with his backhoe because the hoses on his extended hole were hitting it.
Well, I know, but
so he was always having to go around
it. He said, I'll move it next week.
Well, I talked to him one time since then, and he said, I'll be out there Wednesday. And that was 2 months ago. And so,
Roma. What about a place like out in the well field or something that's out of sight?
You
want to come up with some, do a little study and see. Here's where we would allow
got a spot somewhere around the ranch, don't we?
We can look and think about that, but that's not, I mean, it's not our responsibility to find him a place to camp.
Then do we say you've got to camp on a member's lot that you're making a deal with? Is that what we're going to say?
I think all we say is if that's our decision is that no.
And I think he'll offer to give him his place if he clean up the trailers and stuff out there. Just let him have that until it's sold, which could be a long time. I mean, he has options.
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. I will just let him know that they don't want to give him permission to leave the trailer there through the winter. And he can decide what to do with it from there.
Yeah.
And because of the water and spring and septic issue, that's probably not a good place for him to count on or plan for next summer.
And if he plans,
you know what, if you want, Larry, you can tell him to come by and see me. Because I can tell him in a nice way, hopefully. He's been very nice. Just say, you know, trouble is these people, this is their home away from home, and they pay for it. And the spring issue, the water issue, this. And then maybe help him with some other options on where he might go with members and stuff. Or I mean, you can do it, but...
Well, I'll talk to him.
Yeah.
I don't mind.
I don't want him to get the impression the ranch doesn't like him because he's been a very nice fellow. He just, the nature of what he goes.
Before when I was talking to him, I hadn't even thought of the septic system problem.
I never thought where they're going.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to just say Larry's going to talk to Alan on options.
Okay. A couple of other things with him... He did move the screening outfit of Robinson's. He just pulled it down off out in the flat. He buried a couple of dead animals, a cow that Robinson's had shot because it broke its leg, I guess, and a mule that had died somewhere. So he's continued to do things to try to be helpful and earn his keep. He has asked about what we're going to do this fall, winter with our calves. Usually we feed them, try to fatten them up, and then sell them off in the fall. He would like to buy them and or trade work. You know, we've been wanting to do this or this or this, but we don't have the budget to do it. So he said, well, what if we do a trade and I'll take cattle as a trade instead of payment? That way, while I've got my equipment here, I can go ahead and
work on whatever you guys want to work on.
We have the tabs, but gosh, if it was $4,000 for that little puddle up.
No, it was that was $1,900 for that what he did there.
That's expensive. And there's no.
It's
a huge your calves.
It would probably, I mean, just to haul a track hoe out there and do nothing and haul it back, somebody's going to charge you $500.
We have 13 calves.
Should have.
There were 13 up at the moment. And now that all the Robinson cows are in there, it's hard to tell.
What's where?
What's where. Hopefully none of our calves go home.
We've got some coming over the top, too. I know it's on the outside of this. There's
cows all over that.
They're coming from over in...
Well, and that will go into kind of what is our winter time, what our winter time plan is anyway on.
Well, you need to decide whether you want to keep a cow herd or not. If you want to keep running cows, take it up to what level or whatnot. I mean, that was Brent's question too. There's a lot of decisions to make about your livestock.
Brent has one more year lease on the grazing for our BLM and private grazing. So that's something that's coming up pretty quick anyway to know whether we build our own little herd, whether we continue.
Cows, we have pretty decent cows. All but one of them got pregnant. They're decent cows, but, you know, you just have to decide, you know, are we in the cattle business or not?
How much money can be made on that?
Well,
last year we spent half of what we made on price checks and bull fees and whatever else. We got a check for $3,500 roughly last year back. But the
in the budget.
We made more money on that little cow herd than we did on
all the Robinson grains.
Yeah, I'm thinking if we do our own herd, we're going to make more money.
I think.
Do we know on our calves this year what we've got? Steers, heifers.
I kept all the heifers last year back, sold all the bulls. I think we sold 6 or 7 bull calves,
yeah.
Kept all the heifers. Of course, they won't bull up this year because they're babies. But last year's heifer calves that I kept back, the two-year-old they have had. In fact, we lost one cow with a heifer or with a calf this spring. But we're going to be up to, we had 21 minus the 1, 20 plus. Let's just say, like last year, we had half and half. We'll be up to about 26, and we talked about taking it up to about...
So we have 13 calves, and maybe half of them are bull calves, would sell this.
Yeah.
So whether we sell them at auction or sell them to Alan, that's...
He'd have the pay block price, and it's pretty good. Right now, a black calf, they're premium. I heard a report the other day of 210 for that's higher than I've ever seen it for black calves.
210 per pound?
10 a pound on there. These are under feeder calf, but that would be at our price, our age right now. Of course, when they hit 800 pounds, they're going to be more down around $110. Maybe, you know, you don't know, that's a long way away. In the cow business, that's a long way away. But anyway, they yield. We got, before our prices got knocked off, the thing we do have to do this year, though, is we have to have a bull. And we have to keep a bull. Either we keep one back or we get one, because if Brent, his lease is over next year, and that calf would only be a yearling calf if we kept out of that one. He has a huge, beautiful Angus bull, which I almost kept a bull out of last year. We're not in registered stock or purebred stock, so that big Angus on one of our Beefmasters will yield a very good bull. If we keep a bull calf this year, by next year, we're ready to bring our own cows with that bull without purchasing. Or we can purchase out. But see, he'll only be related to one of the existing herd and to 6 of last year's herd of that bull. So we can safely breed that bull to be a good calf. So you'll have to take that off at least one of those bulls. And we'll just take our male calves and choose the very best one. That's what he recommended last year. If we're going to shoot the bull. But there's money in those cattle, and the horse herd is going to go down substantially. I've been trying to get it down. I don't have a phone, so I can't sell anything. And I don't. Yeah, so did I. I didn't even have time to get my messages off. If anybody calls me, you'll still see it's clear full.
Yeah.
The fuse is good in it, though. We replaced a fuse. It worked great. I was dancing in the street. I said, I don't have time to make calls now. I put it down. Went out, came back in. The fuse is still good. I pulled it out and looked at it. Vance came up and worked on it. And I got a new charger thing for it. The charger works. The phone says fully charged. The fuse is good. Everything seems to work and cannot make a call. And I had Brent. Brent says he's having the same trouble. Larry says he's having the same trouble. So it may be the system. But that's not been the problem the whole time.
Vance, are you still on the phone call?
Yeah. There was a huge glitch in the Alltel network for northern Arizona, southern Utah. I was affected by it when I drove up last Thursday. I had no problems when I was at the ranch, but they have confirmed it. Larry Meltzer actually got them to admit to it. And, you know, they won't tell you exactly what's going on, but you guys may still be being affected by that. Holy, I'm sorry your phone's not working again, dang it. You know, I really try to keep that thing going for you.
I figured out the other day of the 9 months I've been there, we've had less than a month, less than 30 days collective.
It seems like the phone waits for me to turn my back on it, and then it screws you over.
And I hate it because I feel like an idiot because they said, well, it was working when I was there. Well, when we...
I know. No, I'm not using that as an excuse.
And,
I'm just
and I go, yeah.
saying that's what's happening.
Is there a way that maybe between Vance and Larry Meltzer and anybody else we can get some substantial information where I hate paying a bill.
Yeah.
I know.
It's a big bill.
Almost never had a phone. That's one of the reasons my wife really had a hard time out there is because in a case of an emergency, we can't even call 911. We can't call anybody. And all of my friends from my lifelong hate me because I haven't talked to them in 9 months and they think that I just moved away and don't care. I can't. And then the email, like right now, the computer fires up, but it shows page not available. You can't get on the email. And Brent says that happens periodically.
Right. What I would suggest, if you get a chance, to try Brent's cell phone on it, Ollie.
Try
Brent's old...
Yeah, I know, but if Larry has the best reception out of any of us that are permanent, when Larry Meltzer's phone doesn't work, nobody's home.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm just down the road from him. But the phones do make a difference. We did a lot of research at Joe McElroy's place a week ago. Sunday. And we learned a whole lot of stuff because we had a huge collection of hardware there to try.
Well, the truth is, all the phones that I've had have been just like hand-me-downs. Like,
yeah, I know. And I don't know if that's part of the problem or not, but I do know that the newer the phone, the crappier it is out there in that situation.
Okay. So a newer phone is actually worse than an old phone?
Yeah, because they waste too much time putting cameras and MP3 players in them. They don't care about anything else.
Well, I have the oldest phone out there. So
I also have those ruggedized phones with the larger antennas and stuff, which doesn't have all the
Larry Sims has a phone, and he comes down to the ranch. He says he triangulates between the water spigot, the comfort station, and the store. And he said that's where he goes to make calls. He said,
yeah, but see, I have an antenna.
I know.
That I plug into the back of that
phone.
He
has one, too, I think.
You can also buy
a... You should have the best phone out there, shouldn't I?
Well, yeah.
I mean, considering all the hardware that I have hooked to that house, and I'm the only guy out there who can't make a call.
I know.
And you can also buy a repeater that you can stick on the end of that antenna.
No, he's already got that, Dustin.
No, but this is just an antenna that physically attaches to the cell phone. You can actually buy a repeater that goes out to the end of that, and that will extend out to any phones in that area.
Yeah, those don't work up there. We already tried that.
Talk to
you have to have a reasonably good signal coming in for those to work, and guess what? Ain't got one.
I want to fight the phone battle. I want somebody who knows something about phones, because I guarantee my best idea is worse than the worst guy out there's idea. I know nothing about phones except when I plug everything everybody tells me to plug in. If I can't make a call, I set the rascal down.
I mean, get the names of the equipment.
Yeah. We will. I'll tell you what. Rather than take up more of your time here, let's. We'll email back and forth. And Ole, is your email working?
We can read all the old emails that have been sent. We can't get on the internet to receive or send anymore.
Oh, my God. Okay. Well, I was going to say we could discuss it via email. I mean, this can get really involved, and it doesn't really need to happen right here, right now. It's enough for me to know that it's not working again.
I hate to sound like a broken record. I've, at every single board meeting, I have the same complaint, but I know everybody's trying on it. I don't want anybody to feel like I don't appreciate the work, because Brent's tried, Bob tried, Vance, everybody's tried, but the bottom line is, I can't call anybody ever, and it gets really
hard. Are there any other
people
that we've talked to in the surrounding area that have run into this?
To my way of thinking, because of the public nature of the ranch headquarters on that entire road, Skidampaw Road, we ought to have the best phone system out there. Because of who we have to deal with, who you deal with, and
emergency.
How
they are.
Yes,
eight little kids, and we've killed over 20 rattlesnakes this year within a 1 mile radius of my front deck. Three of them on our lawn.
All right.
If I had a rattlesnake bite on my 2-year-old, who would probably poke it with a stick, I can't drive fast enough.
I think
it's
Lawrence talking to somebody that specializes in wireless communication.
I think it's the human liberty that I deserve.
And it might be worth an investment. I mean, there are people who do.
I know.
Talk to them and say, what does everybody else do?
I get,
is there something we can do?
My friend's saying, you said you'd...
I've heard, I mean, Vance and I have got... I'm a communications guy, so that's what I do for a living, but it's more internet-level stuff. But I know out there on the internet, you know, I've talked to some people about that they've had good luck putting in internet phones with a satellite. Some services do, some services don't.
Starband doesn't have enough bandwidth.
We don't have,
so
the internet doesn't work now.
So, and there's other services now that are competing with Starband. There's HughesNet and there's some other ones. And I've heard of some other ones.
By Alltel, that there would be 8 new towers on the Pinks by September. That was what they told us at the place.
We could also do
all these problems.
Long haul network shots.
A weeks away.
It would cost us money, and maybe we have to meet somebody else. But there's things to do. You can do some things. It all takes money.
Well, the other,
I have more faith
in
a passenger pigeon right now.
No, that's big money.
Honestly, at least
we have
call
to,
out every
then, yeah.
3 days. I don't get any calls ever.
Well, it sounds like the internet needs to be fixed too, and I don't know.
Communications in general.
Well, if I can't communicate with Linda in any possible way and people show up, what I've been doing, people show up, and I bolt up there, stock the cabin, make sure they have everything because, you know, before we just had to clean them up, stock them, and just wonder who's coming.
No, I've also been doing some research.
I schedule my day knowing I have people coming in and out and just not be there.
Some research on computers and stuff for the ranch, and I thought, you know, I've donated a low-level laptop, but it's old. All the equipment up there is old. And the problem with old equipment is it uses power, a lot more power than modern stuff. So that's another thing we should be thinking about is...
Well, Larry Sims said he donated a computer right at the beginning.
But again, they're old. And the problem is because they're old, they use up a lot of power. And if we're on limited power resources, the best thing to do is get the smallest, littlest, low-powerest devices that we can, and they have them out there. So that might be something else we wanted to think about allocating.
Anything's fine.
That works.
Old, whatever works.
Easy.
It needs, when I push the button, to start talking. That's what it needs.
Yeah. And then the internet thing
like
is
searching,
another.
Searching, call failed, call was dropped,
and,
call
and,
dropped.
And maybe that particular satellite service may not work for us. I know there are several competing companies out there now. So maybe we need to investigate. If they're not working, let's go somewhere else.
Who is the go-to guy? Who's the guy? Who do I scream at about my phone?
We should have a public telephone out there, like a telephone booth that's out on sign out on the road, emergency phone. You know, I mean, that's how important.
You know, they used to have
those.
The Forest Service had them. How do those work, where you have the emergency phones that were just off the side of the road, like on Boulder?
They have cell phone coverage for those.
Yeah.
And you don't. Bob, are you there?
I'm here.
Uh-huh.
How can you take a look at you know, the thing is, I don't have Starband. I've never had Starband. I have a lot of information on it. His computer's not resolving web pages, which is a Starband issue, probably. Okay? And if we need to look, you or Brent or somebody needs to power cycle Starband from the get from the ground up, and Starband is very touchy about how equipment is turned on and in what order. And something, you know, he's not resolving IP addresses is what it sounds like, and that's a, you know, that's a Starband thing. We've got to get one of these.
Service. I've looked at the equipment that we've had and stuff, and it's very old, funky, and kludgy from what I've seen. I mean, I put in networks for the federal government, so I deal with this stuff all the time, and it's funky. We need to get a new decent computer, a monitor that has a low power flat screen monitor, a decent printer, all these things that are supportable.
Printer works good.
Have warranties, things we can deal with support. And then as those things fade away on support, I mean, generally the life cycle on most of the computers that you want to deal with is more max 4 years. The stuff we have out there now is a lot older. So we want it supportable, something we can deal with. It's got current antivirus, current all those things. None of that equipment out there, and I've looked at it and spent some time with it, none of it really has that. So we need to be thinking about that. We also need to be thinking about let's look at if Starband's not doing it for us and they're not supporting us and we don't have time or energy to deal with them,
when you
go with HughesNet or one of the other there was another one, Skyviewer. There's a couple other providers out there in that space now, and we can get good support from them and service from them.
Well, I don't think anybody's ever asked Starband to support us, have they?
That's a whole nother.
You know, you guys, like, again, I don't have Starband. I don't know what the deal is.
I've been contacted hundreds of times.
And what do they do? Do they just say they're not coming out, or they tell you they're going to charge you? What's their policy?
I can't remember. They've been contacted a lot.
But they've been contacted several times.
So if they're not helping us, we need to get rid of them and go with something else.
You know, not that they'll be any better, which they probably won't be, but you never know.
Well, you never know. And that's the thing is if we're dealing with something that's not working for us.
Fans is back.
No.
Well, I can, you know, what I can do is I can bring my computer over. You know, mine's working fine. Starband's working fine. I've never had a problem with that. Bring my computer over there, plug it in there, and see if it works. If it's
and there may be a different issue with that, too.
Or it's a modem issue.
Like, I was trying to play with it, but it's connected via USB and not Ethernet for some strange reason.
What?
Yeah, the Starband is connected via USB, not...
No, I'm
talking about our system at the ranch.
I don't know.
And so... And I was trying to repair that or play with that, but the problem is I don't have the drivers, I don't have the software, I don't have the documentation. So you can't deal with that. Again, like I'm saying, it's old and funky.
Get a new one.
And so we need to get that replaced. We need to go with a different system.
You guys that are in the know, what's that cost? We bought a new computer.
$299.
I don't recommend you get, and I don't recommend you get just any old computer. If we're going to do something like that, you can buy a low-power computer that runs basic email, a web browser, and that's really all we need, right? Low-power computer without a fan. Get $250. You can buy a low-power, nice little low-power computer on the Internet. I'm an Internet guy. I can get it any day of the week. $250, nice little low power Linux computer, and then you can get a monitor for $150 to $200.
Email and phone out there,
and so you want something that's current, that's supportable, that somebody can go in and help you.
But that means okay, and we need to get a new.
And I'll volunteer to set that up. I don't have a problem with that. I'm 2 hours away.
Right, mine's Ethernet.
You
know, why don't we just get an Ethernet?
So I think what we need to do is look in what is the nature of our contract with Starband, because sometimes they have scenarios where, you know, if you break the contract
Starband,
after that.
Right?
Okay. This would not be a bad time to try to deal with Starband because they just brought out a whole new group of equipment.
Yeah, I agree with you, Vance.
Hey, try to get that Nova stuff. Joe's got it and it works great.
That's what I got.
Yeah, let's get something current. It's supportable.
I mean, I think they offer an upgrade path that's reasonable.
Timer now have, and I wish I could tell you the name, but they talk over with the computer. They talk with
the voice over internet. Yeah, it's
they have earphones.
It's tough to do that on satellite though. That's the only problem.
Yeah,
and there are some services that do support satellite. And I've talked to Vonage. I have Vonage at home. I do an internet phone at home. That's what I do. I don't have a regular landline. I have an internet phone.
What if you tried that?
What's that?
What's your upload?
It depends on our, well, whatever we're paying. I don't know.
If you go with DSL, it's like 687 kilobits, but the first level of some of the broadband now is 2 megabits.
Yeah, but what's that?
Now, whoever that is off in the distance has hit on the whole problem.
Yeah.
Starband raw throughput on the uphill side, the uplink side, is 19K, and that is all, and they're all like that.
Yeah.
Wave won't work.
And that's why you got problems.
Well, if you're doing some, you know, and I don't want to get into the technical specs, but there are some that you can get, you can get it under 9.2, but
IHOP has a big stack.
We can look at
that.
Starband and Facebook, but I can't call them.
We need to look at that
on an upgrade. And okay, I'm going to have Linda Kimmel here to help for that, and I can make recommendations on equipment and stuff because we need to allocate some money to do that.
Let's have Bob tell us what the action is.
Okay, what I'm going to, as an action, I'm going to have Linda get me the Starband bill with the account number that Deer Springs has. I'll go ahead and call Starband, talk to them, and see about what it takes to get an upgrade. Because the way my modem is, it's idiot-proof.
It's not on this one.
I know. So if we want to get an idiot-proof one like the Joe McElroy has, I have. And
yeah, let's get what you got.
Start with an Ethernet connection. You plug it in your computer and it works.
Yeah, it's not set up that way, unfortunately.
And then we'll get one.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I will gut that room so there's nothing sitting in there but the box and the table. And then the other person who's involved in this equation will make it so when I go in, it works.
Yeah. Because we don't want to expect you to be doing that.
Well, I see a thousand cords running up into the ceiling and out into the wall. One goes into the root cellar. Some of them are like extension cords. Others are computer cords. And I think, I'm sure.
And we just need
to do when they put that in
there. Get a good setup.
I push the computer on.
The electrical
and it says, I can't do anything. Yeah, I just go.
I can come up with a bill of materials and what it would cost for decent equipment, including even new power strips and stuff that we need. And then I'll submit it to the board, and then we decide if we want to pay for it or not.
Okay.
How much do you pay for Starband a month?
$50. $49.95.
Yeah, the install is where they get you at like $250 or
$299 to buy the modem and the antenna, and then you sign up for a 2-year contract.
Like, yeah.
So I would like to make a motion that we approve right now a budget to do this, so it's not got to come back before the board next month.
I agree.
Month. Let's approve.
What do we want to set the cap on for that budget?
$1,000 or $1,000 something.
Let's set it at $1,000 for the whole project
to get this resolved.
Hey, it's been
right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Email 911.
Yeah.
Can you do that?
No.
Get somebody.
When they check it, they're like, "Oh, somebody died at Deer
Springs."
Okay. I'll second that.
Been motioned and seconded. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
I'm not even on the
$1,000 price range.
That solves the internet computer thing.
Starman, let you know what that is. Okay.
Okay. The phone thing. What's our action item on that? Are we just going to wait till their new towers and see if that solves it?
We got to have a phone. I can't even call my wife.
So can we look at a local contract? Whoever works with communication devices out there, there's various wireless people.
Well, we should try and figure out why it's not working right now so that we know if that's going to help anything to go to
school.
If it's the phone that I have, that's an older phone.
Yeah.
But
would it make a sense to have a bigger tower? Would it make
sense
to have a different antenna?
You know what?
Would it make sense to have another?
Everything works. That thing works as clear as a bell. It's as clear as I'm sitting right next to you. So I don't really think it's the reception. I mean, when it comes
then
in,
maybe it's the phone, and we need to get a different phone.
But when I can't, when it won't make the call, then we're stuck. But
well,
I know.
Get Brent's phone over there and see if Brent's
my various phones. Which ones are?
I asked Brent yesterday morning. He said his phone wasn't working at his house. So, other than just like the last few days, I don't know if that's a good barometer because something's going on with the network that's making it hard right now.
What service do we use? Altel?
Altel.
Is it Altel the only one to use?
No, Verizon. Here in town, at my computer, I can't talk on this phone.
at my computer. I have to go out on the porch
I can't
to
either.
Talk to anybody.
And I have the exact same.
So phone. Do we need to maybe look at another service? Do we need
my
to look at Verizon?
My husband works out of the ranch phone.
I have South Central, which is just, you know, our local provider, and I make calls all over on Deer Springs. So I
so maybe we
haven't
look at them.
Really tried going right around the ranch house. I'm usually out showing property or something, but I think that's at least something to explore as well.
Well, the other thing to look at is analog
radio. Bob has Verizon,
too, they jump back
right?
And forth out
there. And another thing to consider is 2009, all analog signals go away.
Yeah. Not for cell phones necessarily.
They're changing that?
You're talking about TV there.
No, they're talking about the buying back all the analog cells.
And talking about it, exactly right.
So South Central works all right because we're on my phone, we're paying a South Central bill to keep the 644-3007 number open, and then it's forwarded to this. That's how I get.
What is our Deer Springs cell phone plan? What's our pay? Our rate? What do we?
We pay almost $60 a month.
Well, it's $79.
What I really like about South Central is we actually have board members here in town.
Right.
We actually can talk to people that really can say, hey, okay, this is something
that's
true
because we're in the South Central district, and the other guys, they don't know our name when you call them.
Right.
I carry.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I would really.
That might be a good idea.
Say you should at least look at that.
I did. I took a South Central phone out to the ranch one night when we were out there working with Mike, and working on Mike. We weren't working with him. Anyway, I took it out there, and it was the same as what I was getting with this. But Terry's is Altel, and he was getting things, so I'm sure it's the equipment, the phone. But I didn't get any. I didn't get much range out there with South Central. So, but if you're getting it all over, what should your phone look like? What kind of phone do you have?
Motorola.
A Motorola. That's a good one.
Because I know they make certain ones that are better, ruggedized, have extendable antennas, and.
Well, they did
and
not
they have all
me,
the fancy ones.
They didn't tell
they
me.
They don't have anything, you know. And so
well, I don't need a camera. I don't need anything tricky. I just need a phone.
Although you
but,
say
and I also,
I also have a digital camera.
Exactly, it could be.
And I also have a plug-in Wilson antenna that I use.
That's what Terry uses.
That's what I have, and it's.
So the combination of those two has been working
then
pretty
I,
well.
Then we will go to South Central because I looked into
it. I'm not saying you should without doing a little testing, but I would certainly explore them if you're going to explore other carriers.
And it wasn't any better than this for what I was using.
My cell plan is a nationwide free roam, so it doesn't matter whose system
too.
I'm on.
So is your screen.
And with my Wilson antenna, there's most places on the ranch that it works in my pickup truck. And I have no idea whose system I'm on. I'm an Altel customer.
Yeah, and the fact is, the other day when ours wouldn't go, I got in his truck, we went up, and it did go.
So maybe it's just the phone.
It's the phone.
He has a 691 number, whereas...
I don't.
691 is...
We're 689.
Are we stuck in a contract on that?
I think we're close enough to the end if we
and
are.
And if we're at the end, let's look at another provider.
Yeah,
and
I was. That's why I took out.
I know I had, you know, Altel before when I converted over to South Central. There were a lot of areas east of Kanab that I got a lot better reception.
With Altel.
With South Central.
That would be the first provider I'd go to.
See if we can talk to them.
Because there are people there.
See if they can get us a nice new.
Well, we're already paying South Central. We paid out both South Central and Altel. I mean, we have two bills there, and that's one of the reasons why I looked into changing it to South Central when they. And
what is the? Oh, that's the phone landline.
The 3007 number
and
landline, but the landline is on Hillside Drive.
You know, like up on Cedar Mountain, we had poor coverage with South Central. We went to the board members. They allocated a new tower up there. They put in a tower up there and solved the problem. And I mean, you're not going to get that with some nationwide group. And so I think it's at least something to explore and do some signal tests on and maybe even get with a South Central person.
And I will appeal to them on their...
what their plans are for coverage in that area.
Public service, because, like I said, the ranch on that road...
There's a safety
place
issue
where you could go, exactly. Anybody on that road ought to be able to go there.
Okay, I'm let you work. Talk to South Central and see what they can do.
Okay.
Great. And I'll come by the ranch.
Mention
I'm
also
by the ranch and
take a look at your phone.
Okay.
Give it one moment.
You might mention also for South Central, if they can make it so we get good calls out there, there's a ton of people that will switch over to South Central.
Absolutely.
Because everybody asks the same questions, who are you with and how do you do? So it might be worth it for them to make it work good as well.
Who's the local people? Who would I talk to, just at the office, or is there anybody in specific you would suggest?
Mike Noel.
Mike?
Has been very helpful before. He's not on the board right now, but that's who we worked with before. But the is Randy on the board now?
Brown?
And Robinson.
Robert Houston's the president. Thank you, Ryan.
And so.
Randy Brown? Is that who you were
talking about? No,
it's Oversight Committee.
Randy's on Garcane.
Oh.
Was it Brent Collins? Is his dad on South Central Board now?
I see. Okay.
All right. Next, the